I'd like to call to order the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, November 15th, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have five of seven council members present, so we do have a quorum. I'd like to ask Mr. Standish to read item one of the executive session.
Pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A4, litigation regarding Clifton v. Town of Oro Valley Board of Adjustment.
I'd like to move that we go into executive session with the town manager, deputy town manager, town attorney, legal services director, and the town clerk.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Nays? The ayes have it, 5-0. Thank you. We'll go into executive session. So we'll resume the regular session when we return. We'll resume the regular session. I want to say good evening to everyone. Thank you for joining us. We began our meeting earlier at 5:30 with an executive session. But welcome to the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, November 15th, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. We have six of seven council members present. If you would please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Public Safety Personnel Retirement System Board will hold their next meeting on November 16th at 2 p.m. in the Kachina Conference Room. And then the Stormwater Utility Commission will meet next on November 16th at 4 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. There will be a neighborhood meeting regarding La Cañada Moore rezoning on November 16th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then again on November 20th, at 6 p.m., there will be a neighborhood meeting regarding Silverhawk at the River here in the Council Chambers. And then the Budget and Finance Commission will hold their next regular session on November 21st at 4 p.m. in the Council Chambers. Board of Adjustment will be meeting on November 28th at 3 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. The Historic Preservation Commission will meet next on December 4th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Planning and Zoning Commission will meet on December 5th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then the Town Council's next regular session is scheduled for December 6th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then also we have one more thing to go over. There are going to be a handful of community events coming up here in November and December to go over and kind of discuss the OV path forward. So we have the different meeting dates and times and locations here on the slide. And for more information, residents can go to www.ovpathforward.com. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Councilmember Jones-Ivy will recognize Dylan Pan, a fourth grader at Basis Oro Valley Primary.
It is my privilege and honor to introduce to you Dylan Pan. Dylan's a fourth grader at Oro Valley Basis Primary. Dylan is a star with tons of talent. To start, he played JoJo in Seussical, and that's Seussical like Dr. Seuss, Seussical the musical, and is cast in the fall season's Matilda with the Sorrel City Theater. Dylan loves to sing and has been part of the Tucson Boys Chorus for 3 years. He also plays piano, and is it called the pipa?
Pipa.
The pipa, and the pipa is a traditional Chinese instrument. Dylan's talent does not stop just there. He also is a young reporter at Bear Essentials News and has published articles about local events. He plays soccer with the CDO Boys Gold Team and competitively swims with the Fast Swim Team, where he is the 8 and under Arizona champion in the 50-yard breaststroke. At Basis, Dylan is a straight-A student that has a love for math and history. In the first grade, he was introduced to robotics, where he developed a passion for engineering. He's working on the first Lego League team for the 23-24 international competition season, and he spends many hours happily perfecting an autonomous mission to score points for his team. It is real clear, Dylan, that your passion and your focus will help you achieve all of your goals in life, and we are so proud to recognize you as our Spotlight on Youth. I am
We'd like to invite family to come up to be a part of the photo. Yeah, family, friends.
Let's have you move. Yes, that will work. Thank you very much. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Let me get one more. 3, 2, 1. Got it. Thank you.
Dylan, we're very proud of you. And the Bear Essentials newsletter is a wonderful publication, and that's exciting to learn that you are one of the journalists that contribute to that newsletter. But, we appreciate you being here tonight. Councilmember Jones Ivy has another item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also want to remind all of you of Project Grad. There is one day left in December, because December is our holiday, for coming to volunteer and helping our grads realize a really safe and sane grad night. And so December 9th, which is the second Saturday, they are looking for volunteers to come and help paint. The theme is Let the Good Times Roll. They're bringing New Orleans back to Tucson. So please mark your calendars for December 9th. And starting in January 2024, they will have a work day the 13th and the 27th, which will take us back to the second and fourth Saturdays of the month. They meet in the T building over at CDO, which is at the west side of the campus. And also, if you haven't marked your calendars, for the 21st annual Oral Valley Cup, that's going to be a fundraiser for Project Grad, please do. This event, again, is going to be held February 2nd. And there is a new contact person. It's David B. Newell. What do we call these things, guys? Help me out here. David B. Newell. And I just got this, so I'm just putting this in my mind. And that's DavidBNewell@yahoo.com. His contact phone number is 503-957-6559. He wanted me to emphasize to you that he's looking for foursomes for this event. So if you could please respond to David, I'd certainly appreciate it, and I will have a slide made for next time for all this information. The other thing that I want to remind you of, this Saturday, which is Saturday the 18th, we do have our free shred event. For all of you that are saving those important papers that cannot be thrown out in the trash, it is going to be from 9 to 1 over in the marketplace at 11785 North Oracle Road. This location is closer to our Oracle entrance. And, of course, when you come in, you will see the large shred trucks. So I encourage you to participate in that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Are there other council reports this evening? Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This one's kind of hot off the presses as well. About an hour ago, at the request of a couple of residents who had been contacting us, Mark Platt and the Reverend Ann Strong, I took a trip over to the Big Dog Park at Naranja Park. We have a big dog park and a small dog park. And it's really a pleasant surprise, kind of like pickleball. You need to see it to believe it. When you build this thing, the people will come. And I got out of there probably 4:45 to get to this meeting. There were at least 15 dogs there. I can only imagine how many dogs there are there after work, after 6 o'clock or so. Kenny Darr from K-Gun 9 was out there doing a story about it. It's a big deal. And I wanted to commend the staff for doing the work and also these residents for the pride that they take in this facility, the pride and ownership they're taking, just like our Friends of groups. They've set up sort of a picnic area. And they've let me know the slight, you know, imperfections that we, the town, can easily fix. Like, for example, a gate that doesn't close or an electrical outlet, which I verified for myself. You can't really easily plug something into. And then finally, the dirt perimeter of the park. It's compacted near the grass, but it's loose dirt all the way out to the fence. Why is that a big deal? Well, think about it. With dogs, it makes a big mess on your way home. So in addition to commending staff, I would encourage staff to take a trip out there and respond to the requests of these residents to see these things that are really easily fixed. And I just hope we can come together and bring that facility up to the condition it deserves to be. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Wilkins, your report.
Thank you. A few announcements. As you may know from my last report, we have a couple of key staff that just started with us. Scott Zufelt is our new IT director. This is his second meeting here with us. And then starting just this last week is Rosalind Epting, our new Parks and Rec director. And then Jeffrey Hidalgo, he was at the last meeting, but he's our new PIO. He's up in the booth up there, so he was here last time. A milestone I wanted to call out, this was also in my report. Our community center had a record-breaking membership of 3,200 members currently registered. If you hadn't seen that's a 51% increase from last year. So additional 1,077 members. So congratulations to our Parks and Rec staff. And I hope, well, obviously it's a very successful program. Also, holidays are coming up. So soon, just around the corner, the Oro Valley Festival of Arts and Light celebration at the Marketplace. And that's brought to the citizens, a partnership of us, as well as the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance, or known as SACA. So that's Saturday, the December 2nd. That's the tree lighting in Santa, and then also on December 3rd. So that's all I have right now.
Thank you. The agenda will remain as posted. I do have one blue card for call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. When you come to the podium, if you'd please state your name and whether you are a resident of Oro Valley. Tim Terrace.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members and staff, my name is Tim Terrace and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. Thanksgiving Day is an annual national holiday in the United States and Canada, celebrating the harvest and other blessings of the past year. Americans generally believe that their Thanksgiving is modeled on a 1621 harvest feast shared by the English colonists, pilgrims of Plymouth and the Wampanoag people. The American holiday is particularly rich in legend and symbolism, and the traditional fare of the Thanksgiving meal typically includes turkey, bread, stuffing, potatoes, cranberries, and pumpkin pie. The New England colonists were accustomed to regularly celebrating Thanksgivings, plural, days of prayer, thanking God for blessings such as military victory or the end of a drought. The U.S. Continental Congress proclaimed a national day of Thanksgiving upon the enactment of the Constitution, for example. Yet, after 1798, the new U.S. Congress left Thanksgiving declarations to the states. Thanksgiving Day did not become an official holiday until Northerners dominated the federal government. While sectional tensions prevailed in the mid-19th century, the editor of a popular magazine, Godey's Lady's Book, Sarah Josepha Hale, campaigned for a national Thanksgiving Day to promote unity. She finally won the support of President Abraham Lincoln on October 3, 1863. During the Civil War, Lincoln proclaimed a national day of Thanksgiving to be celebrated on Thursday, November 26. The holiday was annually proclaimed by every president thereafter, but not all states complied. And after a joint resolution of Congress in 1941, President Roosevelt issued a proclamation in 1942 designating the fourth Thursday in November as Thanksgiving Day. Today, my family and your families have much to be thankful for. We are especially grateful to be able to bring our concerns to this body in the hopes of many more blessings and Thanksgivings to come. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards for call to audience. We'll close call to audience and go to presentations. Mr. Standish, item one.
Presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 23-24 quarterly financial update through September 2023.
Deputy Finance Director Ms. Gomez will present this item. Welcome, Ms. Gomez.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm pleased to be presenting our first quarterly update through September. All right, jumping right in. Overall, our revenues and expenditures are performing well compared to budget, so we're quite pleased with how the first 3 months of the fiscal year have gone. We'll cover sales tax real quick. It's roughly flat to last fiscal year through September. So we did budget a 3% decline on sales tax, so we're on track there. Some of the areas here, and you can see the growth through September that we've seen, remote seller, those are, you know, the Amazons and things like that. Those are still doing quite well, up 12% year over year. Our bed tax is performing well compared to budget. You can see 8.5% growth. Restaurant and bar continues to outperform our expectations. Retail, that growth, we have talked about that growth slowing just a bit, but we are still up about 2.6% through September. And then utilities, a bit of growth as well. Construction, we have seen a decline of just under 8% through September, but for the second fiscal year in a row, we have budgeted an expected decline of 16%. So that was planned and anticipated for. All right, so we will start with the general fund. Through September, you can see the chart there. Revenues are at $14 million compared to $12.5 million last year. That's primarily year-over-year growth in our two biggest categories, local sales tax and state shared revenue. You can see the uses there that would include transfers out. So we're at $16.3 million through September compared to $12.8 million. That's really our transfers out. I know last fiscal year and years prior, we had been booking our transfers to CIP three times a year, so every 4 months. We've switched that to quarterly just because we're updating our estimates quarterly, and it just made more sense in terms of the flow through the fiscal year. So that's really some of the difference you see there compared to last fiscal year. We did budget to use fund balance of about $5.2 million. We are now looking that we may use about $3.1 million, and I'll walk through some of the reasons for that. We are looking at an ending fund balance of about $20.7 million, which equates to just over 41% of our budgeted expenditures, and that does exceed council's policy by about $5.6 million. All right, covering the revenues in detail year to date, local sales tax, you can see just about flat compared to last fiscal year. Due to some of the positive trends we've been seeing in the local sales tax, and also with construction sales tax not seeing quite as big of a decline as we had planned for. We are looking at a positive year-end estimate there. You can see about 850,000 positive variance right now. That's about 3%. Again, we're only 3 months or one quarter through the fiscal year, so that is subject to change, but that is where we're sitting at right now with our estimates. You can see state shared revenues. Those are up significantly over last fiscal year. That's primarily our state shared income tax. We've mentioned that one-time sort of blip in our allocations because the allocation from the state increased. That's going to be offset in future years with adopted reductions in personal property taxes. So this is just a one-time increase we're seeing here. Charges for services are performing well compared to budget. They're at just under 25% through September. Licenses and permits, we are expecting just a bit of a positive variance there compared to budget. That's based on what we're seeing in terms of activity through the first quarter. Our grant revenues, we are still expecting to land on budget there. And then our all other includes our intergovernmental revenue, our reimbursements from the RTA, interest income, and all of that good stuff. We are at just under 600,000 in actuals through September. And the overage you see there at the year end, 2.8 million compared to 2.56. That is due to a rebate that we received from the Arizona Municipal Risk Retention Pool. In total, we've collected about $14 million in revenues, or 24.4% of our budget. All right, moving on to uses in the general fund. You can see personnel actuals. We're sitting at about $7.8 million through September. We are expecting to see some savings there at year end. You can see that estimate of $34.7 million compared to $35.7 million. That's a variety of things. We've had some position refills at different salaries and different position levels. We've had some vacancies that we've seen. And we also are expecting to see possibly a little bit of savings with our PSPRS budgeted contributions. So you may recall we still budgeted our full required allocation or contribution from a couple of years ago. As our funding status improves, we are funding it per our financial policy, which is just our required rate now, and $2.5 million additional funding per our financial policy. So we could see a little bit of savings there. Again, it's early, so that is subject to change, but that's what we're looking at currently. Operations and maintenance were just about flat compared to last fiscal year and still expecting to land on budget there. You can see actuals of about $3.6 million through September. Our capital, no variance there compared to budget. The bulk of that budget is our westward look improvements, so those are moving along. And then our transfers out, I did mention that we are doing our transfers to CIP on a quarterly basis now, and that is the main reason you see the actuals there, $4.6 million compared to $2 million, but we are expecting to be on budget in that category at year end. So overall, we've spent about $16.3 million in the general fund, expecting savings there. $62.7 million was our budget, expecting to come in about $61.8 million. We'll move on to the highway fund. Not much news there. You can see our sources are just up a bit over compared to last fiscal year. That is due to some of the growth in HERF, but also our interest income is doing quite well compared to last fiscal year. Expenditures, we are at about $500,000 through September compared to about $400,000 last fiscal year. And you can see off to the side there, we did budget use of fund balance in the highway fund of a little over $500,000 due to some of those positive signs that we're seeing in interest income. We are expecting to use a bit less than that, just about $437,000. And that would bring us to an ending fund balance in the highway fund of about $440,000. Some of the details on the highway fund sources, obviously our HERF state shared revenues are the lion's share of the revenues in this fund, but growth over last fiscal year, you can see we've collected just over $1 million compared to about $964,000 last year. Licenses and permits is a small category here. You can see those collections there, still expecting to land on budget in that category. And then all other includes our interest income. So you can see we've collected about $65,000 or booked about $65,000 through September, and our year-end estimate expecting to come in about, I believe it's about $70,000 for a positive variance in interest income. Moving on to the expenditures for the highway fund, still expecting to land about on budget there. You can see personnel, we've spent about $288,000 through September. Operations and maintenance is up over last fiscal year. That's due to some of the inflationary factors that we've talked about previously, materials, field supplies, maintenance, and outside professional services costs, all seeing some increases there compared to last fiscal year. And capital, we don't usually see that ramp up until we get further into the fiscal year, especially with the payment preservation program, but still expecting to land on budget there, $4.2 million. In total, we spent in the highway fund just over $540,000 through September. And you can see their estimates about on budget, just a bit of personnel savings that we're expecting at year end. And then finally, we'll cover the community center fund. Here's the chart. You can see revenues up $2 million compared to $1.8 million last year. So some positive growth we're seeing there. Our uses are actually down just a bit. We've spent about $3.6 million compared to $3.7 million last fiscal year. We did budget to use fund balance in this fund of just under $450,000. We are now expecting to use fund balance of about $273,000, so a positive trend there. That's due to what we're seeing in local sales tax, but it's also our town operating revenues, seeing some positive trends there with member dues primarily on the fitness side, but also our recreation programs are doing well, just overall looking very strong in that category. That use of fund balance of about $273,000 would bring us to an ending fund balance in the community center fund of about $735,000. Cover the revenues for the community center fund in a bit more detail. You can see local sales tax is looking strong there, up a bit over last fiscal year. We are expecting to see a year-end amount of about $3.7 or $3.8 million. Again, some of those positive trends that we continue to see in remote seller. A portion of that goes into this fund, but also retail and restaurant and bar. Contracted operating revenues, those are still set at year-end estimate equal to budget. As we progress further through the fiscal year, we'll be getting some updated estimates from our contractor. But things looking positive there. You can see the actuals of just under $900,000 compared to last fiscal year of $755,000. I mentioned our town operating revenues and how strong those are looking. You can see we've collected just over $271,000 compared to $187,000 last fiscal year. So again, year-end estimate, that's the main reason for the positive variance in the budgeted use of fund balance that we're seeing in this fund. We've been able to bump this up just due to the positive signs that we're seeing with member dues and the recreation programs over there. And then our other revenues, that is our interest income primarily, but also our HOA contributions are in there. You can see just a bit of overage, positive overage there, a year-end estimate of $219,000. In total, we've collected about $2,041,000 in the community center fund in revenues. That's about 21% of our budget. And again, the main positive variance you see there are expected growth in our town operating revenues, but also our local sales tax. Moving on to the uses in the community center fund, contracted. Actuals are at about $1.3 million compared to $1.1 million last fiscal year. So that's growth in their operating expenditures, utilities. I believe labor is up just a bit over last fiscal year. Still expecting to end the year on budget in that category. So things looking positive. Our town operating expenditures, we are expecting to see just a little bit of overage there. That is due to our personnel costs in the fund. You can see actuals, we spent about $434,000. Our capital, we've got, again, a robust capital budget in the community center fund. Haven't spent too much through September, a bit of a slow start there, but we are expecting to see the rest of those expenditures as we get further through the fiscal year. So still expecting to land on budget in that category. And then our transfers out, we have already booked our full budgeted transfer to debt service. So that is reflected in the actuals you see there, about $1.7 million. In total, we've spent about $3.6 million in the community center fund, and you can see just a little bit of that overage, the year-end estimate, about $10.2 million, and that's due to our town operating expenditures. That concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to take any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Appreciate your presentation this evening. Questions? Questions? Vice Mayor and then Council Member Bond.
Thank you. So those town operating expenditure increases in the community center fund, are those mostly offset by that additional revenue? Seemed like the additional revenue would more than cover those cost increases.
Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, that's correct. The overages that we're going to see for member dues and some of those positive trends in revenues are going to more than offset that overage. Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then my other question is about the PSPRS savings. You mentioned that we might start seeing some of that PSPRS savings this year. I know that we were anticipating that in the long term that pension obligation would save the town a lot of money, but I wasn't expecting to see it yet. Would you mind repeating the amount, I didn't catch it, that you think could potentially be seen as PSPRS savings?
Sure, we're looking at roughly a couple hundred thousand at this point. Again, you know, we are directing that $2.5 million additional contribution this year. The fact that there is capacity in the budget, the decision may come to contribute additional. It's early. We just are through 3 months of the fiscal year. But yes, it's a couple hundred thousand that we're looking at in terms of budgetary savings.
Okay, great. Thanks. It's exciting to see that start kind of bearing fruit, and I feel glad that we got those good interest rates. So, okay, thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Bowen.
Ms. Gomez, could we go to the general fund summary chart? The question I had asked of staff this morning, is it correct budgeted use of fund balance was projected at July 1st, it would be $5.2 million, and then as of September 30th, $3.1 million?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's fair. We did budget to use 5.2, and we are now estimating 3.1.
Okay, I'd like to let the public know in 25% of the year, we knocked down 40% of the deficit. So that to me looks like we're trending for a surplus, but we're still showing a $3.1 million deficit. And this is something I've just seen consistently in our forecasting. We're very negative in our forecasting in terms of what we're going to spend and in what we're going to collect. And we immediately start seeing much rosier numbers, even in the early forecasts for the year. Second is the question I asked about the municipal risk pool premium. Where in these financial accounts is the payment of the premium covered?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. So the insurance line item is an operations and maintenance line item, and it's spread throughout departments across the town. So you would see that in our attachment A, where you see the expenditures by department.
Do we pay our premium annually, quarterly, monthly?
It's paid quarterly.
Thank you. And could we also go to the chart for general fund uses? Is it correct that through 3 months we spent $7,849,250, and that's 25% of the year?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, not necessarily, because of the timing of our payrolls. So we'd have to look at when our payrolls hit. So I would shy away from just doing a straight 25%.
Okay, I'd like to let the people out there know that can multiply by four, that 7.8 million divided, multiplied by four is 31.2 million. And that's where I think the surplus is going to come from at the end of the year. We still project to spend $34.7 million. And if we go at our current rate, we're going to spend about 31.2. You know, these are the types of numbers. We say, well, there's another payroll coming in. At the end of the year, it's going to be about 31.2. And that's why, you know, we have to separate the results that come operationally from the results that come from forecasting. I think we're not going to really earn a big surplus this year by operations. We're going to earn it by forecasting, because our forecasts have been so negative. I believe that that high number in there must have a lot of people that we don't have yet. We're not going to hire, and they're not going to charge us by the end of the year. Otherwise, I would think the year-end estimate with 25% of the data in the books would be a lot closer to four times 25%. And just want to let the public know, yes, when we run a deficit, we've checked a deficit at the beginning of the year, that would seem alarming. But the deficit turns itself around very quickly. And then finally, I'd like to ask a question about interest income. Right now, that the country's in an area of interest income we haven't seen for my lifetime, basically, since I've been an adult, since around 1980, when I remember everyone was buying gold and interest rates were 16%. Why are our interest rate income, the expected surplus, is so low if we're in such a high interest rate environment? I asked the staff, you know, what are we investing in? Are these truly interest rate instruments, or are they derivative instruments? Because we should really have a good surplus. If it's truly interest income, we should be seeing record levels of interest income right now.
Mr. Mayor, Kinsmore Bowen, if I may respond to a couple of those comments. So I would stress with the personnel, you did mention that we have 25% of the data. That is incorrect. We only have five payrolls that have posted through September. So we'll have a total of 26 payrolls. So that's really only about 19% of the data. I just want to make that clear. The timing of the payrolls is a very important consideration. So this is not reflective of 25% of the data that we'll see at year end, and I hope that helps clarify a bit. The question on the interest income, we did bump up budgets for interest income for this fiscal year, just seeing some of the positive signs that we were seeing last year. In terms of specific instruments, I'll probably defer to our CFO to talk about those a little bit further if he chooses to.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. The town is precluded from investing in derivatives per ARS, so we do not invest in derivatives or any of those types of financial instruments. What we do invest in are very safe debt securities, fixed income securities like treasuries, agency bonds, corporate bonds, and the like. So they are fixed income securities. We are seeing, some of those securities that you that are reflected in what you see this evening were invested a couple years ago. So they had a longer time horizon, and so they are at a lower rate. But as those amounts, those securities mature, then we do take those maturities and reinvest them at current rates and do achieve a higher yield and return on those investments. So so what you're seeing there is kind of a smoothing or effect, so to speak, where we've got part of our portfolio at some lower rates, waiting for those to kind of roll off and mature. And then as they do, we are gaining the benefit of the current interest rate environment and investing at higher yields. So I hope that's helpful.
Just a follow-up question from Ms. Gomez. This report is through September 30th, 2023. That's 3 out of 12 months. And you mentioned we only have 5 payrolls out of 26. Does that mean we have 7 payrolls in the second quarter, 7 in the third, and 7 in the fourth? Because 5 plus 7 plus 7 plus 7 is 26. Can you please explain how on November 15th, which is a month and a half after the September 30th close, that we've only had 5 payrolls in September, but 7 in every other quarter?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. I know it can get a little bit confusing, but in July, we had 2 payrolls. However, the first of those payrolls were pay dates from the prior fiscal year. So our auditors require that we accrue that back to last fiscal year. We will see that again in June of this fiscal year, where the next payroll in July of 2024 will be accrued back to this current fiscal year. So that is why we've only had 5 payrolls that posted through September. As we go through our payroll calendar, it's every 2 weeks. So there are usually 2 months, I think, in the fiscal year where we have 3 payrolls in a month. And then June is always a heavy month because we always have to accrue all of that first payroll back to the previous fiscal year. So when you're looking at personnel from an actuals perspective, particularly in the first quarter, it's always going to look underspent compared to budget.
I just simply disagree with that mathematics because June will be light because we're moving the second payroll into fiscal year 24-25. I get paid every 2 weeks, too. Sometimes you get paid 3 times in a month. Sometimes you get paid twice. That's the only way you can get to 26 paychecks in 52 weeks. The math just, it just doesn't add up. We're on November 15th reporting on something that's a month and a half ago. I can't accept that math that there's
Mr.
5
Mayor,
in one quarter and 7
order.
In every other one.
Point of order.
What's the nature of your point of order, Councilmember Sullivan?
2 points of order. I think Councilman Bowen has exceeded his time limit. And second, he's basically badgering our staff members. She presented the facts quite clearly. If he can't understand the math of payrolls, he's welcome to meet with her after the meeting in a respectful manner. But this is not productive to this council meeting and to the residents attending.
There's
point of order, Mr. Mayor. There's no time limit.
Okay, Councilmember Bowen, there's a point of order. I'm going to address the 2 points of order. Thank you. Councilmember Solomon, there is not a time limit during presentations. That's when there's a motion on the table. There's no motion during presentation. Councilmember Bowen, he stated that he disagrees. I mean, he has the right to disagree. And I appreciate Ms. Gomez. My apologies. I appreciate Ms. Gomez's addressing the questions. I think we can agree to disagree at this point and move on. So thank you, Ms. Gomez. I appreciate your presentation this evening.
You're welcome.
We'll go to the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. We'll go to the regular agenda, item 1. Mr. Standish, items 1A and 1B.
Public hearing, discussion of possible action on 2 items regarding a proposed 59-lot detached single-family subdivision south of Moore Loop in between Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and East Kalalau Drive. The items include item A, resolution number R23-46, type 2 general plan amendment, amending the land use map designation from school to medium density residential and open space, and item B, ordinance number O23-06, Rancho Vistoso planned area development PAD amendment from cultural institution to medium density residential and open space.
Thank you. Senior Planner Mr. Packer will present this item. Welcome, Mr. Packer.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Mayor Winfield and council members. Let's see, that sounds a little better. Again, my name is Kyle Packer. I'm a senior planner with the town of Oro Valley here, and my presentation tonight is regarding a Type 2 general plan amendment and rezoning for a property between Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and East Kalalau Drive. The purpose of tonight's public hearing is to discuss a proposed residential subdivision and the two items to enable it. The first is a Type 2 general plan amendment, and the second is a PAD amendment. Now, both are discretionary asks that must meet specific criteria per code, and the Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended approval of item A and conditional approval of item B. As a reminder, item A must be approved to act on item B. The subject property is approximately 36 acres, shown here in blue, that is just west of Big Wash and east of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard, accessed via Moore Loop. The applicant's proposal is for medium-density residential with 59 lots of one- and two-story detached homes, again accessed via North Moore Loop. This property was annexed and adopted in 1987 and originally had medium-high-density residential zoning. However, in 2009, a general plan amendment and PAD amendment shifted this area to cultural institution zoning to accommodate an Amphi school if demand warranted. However, in 2021, the Amphi school district deeded the property back to Vistoso Partners as it was determined there was not demand. Item A, again, is a general plan amendment to amend the land use map from school to medium density residential and open space, which is the same designation as Valley Vista and built to the same density as the Horizon subdivision, which has a designation of high density residential. Now, staff have reviewed the general plan amendment for compliance with the required criteria and found that the application meets all applicable criteria. The Planning and Zoning Commission are additionally recommending that all lots be restricted to single story to better buffer the adjacent Valley Vista subdivision from view and privacy impacts. The item B tonight is to amend the Rancho Vistoso planned area development map from cultural institution for this property to MDR, medium density residential, and open space. Now, the proposal shown tonight includes 23.5 acres of open space, which is roughly 65% of the property. It additionally provides bank protection along Big Wash, drainage easements to help address pre-existing issues in the adjacent Horizons subdivision, and has a minimum lot size comparable to Valley Vista and close to those shown in the Horizons subdivision. Item B, when it comes to the general plan conformance, conforms with the vision and applicable guiding principles, goals, and policies by preserving and protecting scenic views, finding consensus regarding compatibility and minimizing impacts, expanding opportunities for quality housing within the town, and utilizing existing natural resources for on-site passive recreation. When it comes to public participation, an informational video and two neighborhood meetings were held, and the primary concern here was privacy for the adjacent Valley Vista homes. As shown in the images at the bottom of this slide, the applicant iterated on their design throughout the neighborhood meeting process to address these concerns. Now, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommends two conditions, the first being that the developer work with staff to develop an art project that will help screen the water facility, and the second being that all lots are restricted to single story. Staff have concerns about the first condition, as after site visits, the significant vegetation and slopes proposed to remain in place were found more likely to be effective at screening the water facility than an art feature, which may instead highlight that facility. And again, that highlighted water facility is shown in that yellow circle at the top left of the image. When it comes to soil conditions and conditions of approval, the town engineer has added conditions of approval, and these conditions were added after the commission meeting as detailed studies regarding soils in adjacent developments progressed. In summary, items A and B are consistent with all general plan, Rancho Vistoso PAD, and zoning code requirements that are applicable. Approval of item A is recommended and required to act on item B, and conditional approval of item B is recommended subject to the conditions of approval in attachment 3. Again, staff have concerns that the condition requiring an art screening feature may have the opposite effect than intended. Thank you very much, and the applicant is here with a presentation of their own tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Packer. So Mr. Olin of Paradigm Land Designs, representing the applicant, will present. Welcome, Mr. Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening. I am Paul Olin with Paradigm Land, as you mentioned, representing the property owner and applicant. So, as Mr. Packer mentioned, the zoning history on this is different than a lot of other parcels in Rancho Vistoso, where it's actually already undergone a one change. I think I was standing up here probably 15 years or so asking it to be rezoned to school in line with the desires of Amphi School District. So here I am again. Amphi's original plan was to have a high school up where Tranquilo is, and now, or historically, they then just changed their mind, said they wanted to do a middle school on this property, which would be large and tall buildings. Lit fields in the wash was something that they had talked about. And I just want to mention, too, that the Moore Loop that comes down and serves this property and also the Valley Vista up to the north was designed to accommodate all of the traffic that a school would have put on there. Last thing I'll mention just is that it goes without saying that the existing zoning does allow schools. So, you know, what we're trying to do here, I think, is a better fit. But under the existing zoning, things like charter schools and churches would be and some other institutional uses would be the kind of the fallback. Don't think that would be as good of a fit, but that's where we're at. So I'm just going to expand very slightly on what Mr. Packer explained. This was our first site plan, which you saw on one of his slides on the left side. It kind of follows the same design principle as Valley Vista, following the topo down with some view lots off to the east across Big Wash. Concerns about privacy and view impacts are what we heard at that first neighborhood meeting. And one of the neighbors suggested that we just flip this row of lots along the north edge to the other side of the street. So we took that back to the drawing board and did a couple different versions and found out that it was actually a pretty good idea. So we also met with or offered to meet with any of the neighbors who were at the meeting and stand in their backyards with them and look out at story poles to actually try to understand the views. So the second site plan, this you can see, we again took that suggestion, flopped the street and that northern bank of lots. For the most part, there are a couple lots there, numbers 1 and 2 at the very north end, which because of the roadway geometry just seemed to make a little more sense to keep on that side of the road, although we intentionally angled them due north and not toward those westernmost neighbors within Valley Vista. So I think this was a significant improvement. Again, it's not where we ended up, but we went ahead and set poles out there where the yellow dots are on here, and then met with a number of neighbors out there. So these are just examples. Those are those two poles. Looking kind of west, the first picture on the left there is looking west from the corner down there. So you can see the hillside behind it leading up to Horizons is 55 or 65 feet tall. So there's a pretty significant difference there in elevation. And then the picture to the right there is looking off toward Push Ridge. So again, that's in the closest of what we're proposing as potentially single-story homes, or I'm sorry, two-story homes. Again, that's this dot here on lot 54 off to the right here. So anyway, you can see it would impact some of the lower foothills where there's actually some homes anyway. It's not quite going to block the huge cell tower on the Kai property, but certainly not going to impact the nice Push Ridge views. So this is that second site plan again, and those two lots at the next neighborhood meeting did present a continuing concern about privacy up there on lots 1 and 2. So we agreed to reconfigure those as well. So this is the final site plan here. You can see up in the north end, we eliminated those two lots, moved them down to the south end there where they'll have zero impact. Now there's now zero impacts on Valley Vista in terms of lots backing up to them. They're all facing away. 9 of the 19 lots that are closest there have to be single story anyway, just per Oro Valley standards in terms of where single story lots have to be on the end and you can't have more than 2 in a row, that kind of thing. Most likely, the remaining 10 of the 19 wouldn't all be two-story anyway, simply because there's a strong buyer preference for one story. So if people can get the square footage that they want in one story, they will get it rather than going up. And of course, that all depends on the builder. So it could be that the builder on this site elects to do all single-story, like Pulte did. On Valley Vista, there was no single-story restriction. That was a voluntary market-based decision that Pulte did when they developed that. So, also, last thing I want to mention on this slide just has to do with soils. I know there's been a big focus on soils and some settling that's occurred up in Valley Vista around that lift station and a couple of homes near it in the street. There have been a number of geotech reports, soils reports done on Valley Vista. We've also done one which was tailored in coordination with town staff to respond to the conditions that were found in Valley Vista, which had to do with some excessive moisture found, especially down there around the lift station. So unlike Valley Vista, in the borings that were taken on this property, there was no excessive moisture found on site. No groundwater was hit. There are also strong recommendations in that report about some more robust foundations, utility trenching techniques, slope protection, things like that, that should be implemented during construction. But generally, it was found that this site and the soils on this site are reasonable to accommodate this development. So there's also, as Mr. Packer mentioned, additional conditions added by the town engineer, just mostly relating to additional testing and monitoring that need to occur during construction, and we're okay with those. So this is just a cross-section showing along our northern property line there what a typical situation will look like against Valley Vista. So the boundary between Valley Vista and our site is this green line right here. And so what I've drawn on the left here is a two-story home. And again, if the Planning and Zoning Commission recommendation stands, then this would obviously be a single-story home. But the way I drew this was a two-story home at the time. So the front setback there, you'll have a roadway that's 50 feet, an additional buffer yard there with a 5-foot screen wall, which was one of the things that kind of came out of discussions during the neighborhood meetings. On the other side of the line, within Valley Vista, there's a 60-foot open space swath that brings a lot of drainage down from the western bank of Big Wash. And then you've got the Valley Vista homes there. So in short, you've got at least a half a football field between homes, and you've got some terrain, some elevation difference there with buffer yard landscaping and a screen wall there, which we've kind of paired up to help mitigate some of the visual privacy issues, but also things like headlights. That's why we put the screen wall in there, because as people are driving down the road or coming in and out of their garages, you could get headlight spillage to the north, so that's why we put that screen wall in there. I can understand. I'll go back to this. Try and get rid of that. I can understand restricting some of the northern row of lots to single story, but there's really no benefit for the blanket single story restriction that's recommended by P&Z. They're restricting all these lots back here to single story. Really doesn't provide a benefit to anybody. And we would ask that you take another look if at that recommendation, should you be inclined to move this forward tonight, so that the home builder can really construct homes to fit the needs of larger families in an area that is really not going to have an impact on anybody from a visual or privacy standpoint. Lastly, what I want to do is just run through very quickly here how we sort of line up with the goals and policies of the general plan. So rather than the boring table that I've done in the past, I tried to make it a little bit more visual. So these are the actual pages out of the general plan, and I've put a dot next to every single policy, and the gray dots are not applicable. The green check marks are policies that this proposal meets. And the red ones are applicable policies that that this proposal doesn't meet. So there's no perfect proposal. There's no development that's really going to hit all the marks. But this one does a very good job. So I'm sorry. In terms of community focus and really helping it to be a complete community, you can see the things that these policies we do meet. I'll point out a couple of the ones here that we don't meet. For example, supporting the development of a diverse housing pool within Oro Valley. This is a good spot, I think, for pretty much the same kind of thing that Valley Vista is. Single-family homes on reasonably sized lots. We have the same size lots there, but we're not adding a new housing type or increasing the diversity there. Very little applicability in terms of town services and facilities, but we are coordinating, of course, with the town and Pima County in terms of extending that bank protection to finish the goal of protecting the western edge of Big Wash. As Mr. Kyle Packer mentioned, we do have a lot of open space preservation on here. Currently, the whole thing, the whole property is zoned for school, and as I mentioned, AMFI was envisioning putting lit sports fields out in the wash there, so that this proposal certainly will have a much higher open space preservation percentage, all that area out in the wash, which AMFI could have graded if they wanted to, will be protected. Of course, we'll be abiding by Oro Valley Water and Cultural Resources rules. From a land use standpoint, again, we meet the majority of the applicable policies. Again, we're not adding to the diversity of housing, so I had to put a red mark next to that one. And then in terms of infrastructure here, the one that we're not meeting, and I'm not focusing on all the ones we are meeting because I think some of those are pretty self-explanatory and you can read them, but in terms of enhancing the town's community identity and character through different roadway design and things like that that differentiate different neighborhoods. Rancho Vistoso as a whole has a feel. It has its own architectural controls and guidelines. And so this, just like Valley Vista and Horizons, will be subject to those same design guidelines. So we're not creating something unique here. We're just trying to fill a need for housing. So overall, of the applicable policies, my tally is we meet 27 of them and we don't meet 4 of them. And so pushing a 90% conformance in terms of the applicable policies, I think, is a pretty good score. Again, there's no perfect proposal. And that's what I have. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olin. Before we get to questions, there is a public hearing associated with this agenda item. And so I do have a blue card. If others would like to speak to this item, this is your opportunity to do so. You want to fill out a blue card and bring it to one of the clerks. So I'm opening the public hearing at this time and invite Joe Daly to come. And if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
My name's Joe Daly, and I live on Kailua Drive in the Valley Vista subdivision. My home is one of the homes that currently sit behind the two homes that they removed because they were too close for backyard neighborhoods, etc. The other issue here with this particular development is that when you leave Rancho Vistosa Boulevard and turn down Moore Loop, you get a little commercial development on the corner, and when you come down the hill from landing at the flat spot on Moore Loop at the hill where Valley Vista sits, and you go all the way around to where Moore Loop comes up to Moore Road on the other end of Rancho Vistosa Boulevard, there's not a single two-story home, not one. And here we have a developer coming in on one of the last pieces of property available to be developed in an entire one-story community and wants to put in two-story homes on 6,000-square-foot lots. When you put a two-story home on a 6,000-square-foot lot, you have no yards. If you put families in the yards, where are the families going to play, live, and enjoy themselves in the community, number one? Number two, there are very few children living on the Moore Loop area. It's not a family community. It's a community of older people, retired people, whatever you want to call them, okay? And here we are trying to put that in. The second issue I had, and I addressed the issue at one of the last meetings we had, when you come off onto Moore Loop, Moore Loop is flat for about 300 yards, and then it starts a severe downhill drop. And not only does it go downhill, but it turns in a big curve like this. The entrance to this development is in the middle of the curve, in the middle of the hill. Okay, and what I've said all along is that the development needs a right turn lane so the people that live in that community get out of the traffic pattern when they're slowing down and braking to turn into their development. Now, the last meeting we had, the planning people talked about the fact that the traffic speed on the street is 25 miles an hour. Well, you know, you can stick a pole in the ground and put a sign on it that says 25. That's the perception that's the speed limit. When you get out and you look at Moore Loop with people going down a severe hill, unless you start braking at the top of the hill, you're doing 35 or 40 by the time you get to the entrance of where this development is. So we're creating a problem by not fixing a problem. And I drive the street every day, so I know what the speed limits are. My 3 minutes are up, so I guess I'm done. Thank you.
Did you have other items, Mr. Daly? You're the only one that I have, so if you have...
The other last thing I want to talk about was the fact that the developer showed undeveloped land with a 20-foot pole sticking in the ground. And he said, this is the height of this, and this is the view when you look like this, et cetera, et cetera. Well, sticking an 8-inch pole in the ground versus having a roof with 20 squares of tile on it that you're looking at is night and day. It's not even the same. It doesn't even compare. So my point is what are we sticking a pole in the ground for? Build a thing with 20 squares of roof on it. Let us see that before we decide what we're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. Okay, I have no other blue cards. I'm going to close. I'm going to close the public hearing. Oh, okay, excuse me. Well, I'm going to reopen the public hearing. Apology accepted. So you have your blue card.
My name is Tom White.
Just one moment.
I'm sorry.
Okay, Tom White, so if you please state your name, whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
I'm Tom White, and I'm an Oro Valley resident. I'd like to speak again. I've been at all of the sessions for this development. I thought at the last session we made quite a bit of progress in terms of layout and in addressing the two-story homes. And I had many neighbors I talked to about coming tonight. They said it's a done deal, it's just piece of cake. And then all of a sudden now it seems, and throughout this whole process, it seems we've always had a little bit of a, and I don't mean on the town's part, of a little bait of switch. We're going to take two lots away, and the next proposal we see, we have three more homes added. Last time we talked about the two-story homes, at least with the Planning Commission, it seemed that that was a done deal. And most of my neighbors who were going to come, that was their issue. It was a done deal. Why do I need to get up off the couch and come to the meeting? And I'm just a little irritated on how these two-story homes keep coming back up. And I agree with my fellow citizen that, you know, you put a three-story, 3,000-square-foot home on a 6,000-square-foot lot, there is no room for children. You know, there's barely room for somebody if they want to have a small patio and a swimming pool, which, understandable, but to try to sell it as a family development, it's not going to happen. It just, there's not enough room. But I'm just disappointed that these two-story homes keep coming back up, and without a lot of notice, I know we would have had a lot more people in this room if that was going to be a subject for tonight. So I'd just like to, again, say I'm against the two-story homes, as well as you can take my word, or, you know, along with the neighbors I have. And we just don't think it's conducive for this area.
Thank you, Mr. White. Okay, so I'm going to close the hearing again. And so the hearing is closed. We'll not take any more blue cards this evening. And per our parliamentary rules, I'd certainly accept a motion at this time. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Mr. Mayor, before I make a motion, can I make a comment? Or is it strictly for a motion?
So I asked for a motion, if you'd make the motion. And then we'll have time to
I'm going to move that we continue item A until the following information and considerations are addressed. Can I now make a comment as to why?
As part of your motion, right?
Councilmember Jones-Ivy, if you could finish up what those items are that you're continuing for the addressing so the motion can be complete.
All right. The items are based on a tour that I did, and one of my concerns is there has not been enough soil testing done in this area to truly make a determination as to whether homes can be safely constructed on this site.
Continue.
Okay.
I second that motion.
Well, is your motion complete or those?
Except for my comments, yes. Can I finish? I know it's going to be lengthy, long, but I'll get there. I promise you.
Okay, so
Mayor, I believe if we treat Councilmember Green's second and then return the floor to Councilmember Ryan.
Right. Okay. So it's been seconded by Councilmember Green. So the motion on the floor is, as I understand it, is to continue item A until there is further soil testing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes, thank you. As I said, I went on a tour up to visit this site. I did have an opportunity to look at the homes where the soil damage had occurred. And one of the things that bothers me about this is, and I am directionally challenged, okay? So, Mr. Olin, if you could bring up that slide that you have of the complex, the building that you want to do up at Valley Vista.
This slide?
That slide. Now, on my right-hand side, and I can't tell you whether that's north, south, or east or west, because as I said, I'm directionally challenged, but the homes that I'm looking at, 43 through 59, when I looked at that site, those homes sit at a much lower level than the rest of the proposed houses. My concern is that not only do we not have enough soil samples to determine whether those homes at this lower site are going to be impacted or not, I understand that the homes above that site, across from Valley Vista, there are two homes up there. And between those two homes, there has been some water issue that's going on with some drainage. And so my concern is that until adequate soil testing has been done by the applicant, I don't feel comfortable with moving forward on voting on this at all. I also, the other thing that reinforces that is when I take a look at attachment 3, the conditions of approval, and I look at all of the drainage requirements for these new homes, I thoroughly am not convinced that that soil has been tested to the extent to prevent the damage that has occurred over in Valley Vista. So again, Mr. Mayor, my motion is that we...
That it be continued until further soil analysis is completed. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. This is interesting because this is a case where we separately came to the same conclusion. I had come prepared with much the same motion as Council Member Jones-Ivey, and... I may like to suggest if we could amend some of it, but I also think that we should continue. One thing that we have the advantage of that the Planning and Zoning Commission didn't have the advantage of is knowing about the soils and the settling situation. I know that the neighbors were speaking about that. The Planning and Zoning Commission kind of asked about the settling in the soils, and they were told, oh, you can't really look into that. You're just... looking at the zoning. And so, you know, then it came through with the approvals attached. But kind of since Valley Vista has been developed, there's been new information as these homes near the pump station have settled and the roads have settled. And we still haven't found the cause, pinpointed the cause of that settling. And then we do know that a lot of these other homes that are down here, the ones Council Member Jones-Ivey pointed out, are also on a layer of sediment that's prone to settling. And so I just don't feel comfortable voting for any homes. I expect a home to last 100 years, right? I mean, there's people who live in homes in Oro Valley that are 50 years old, right? So we expect a home that's built here in Oro Valley to... stand the test of time and not just 20 years or 30 years without settling. And so for me, I don't feel comfortable with that. So I would just ask similarly if we could amend the motion to say that when it comes back, no homes, roads, or buildings shall be built on the layer of soil that is known to be prone to subsidence with moisture exposure. And then I had the applicant shall work with the town engineer and the planning and zoning administrator to ensure that proper testing is done on all soils to ensure that this is the case. And the council would like additional information regarding the source of the existing subsidence and of the soils in the area. So, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, I don't know if you would be interested in amending your motion to include something a little more specific.
Yes, I would.
Like
that.
You would?
Councilmember Green?
I second that?
Yes.
I suppose, yes.
Okay, so we have a second for the amended motion. Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before I'm willing to vote on a continuance, I want to hear more information first from our town engineer regarding the soil testing that has been done and any results and conclusions. And then I also would like to hear from the applicant. I don't take lightly continuing something. There's a lot of investment and time and effort involved to get to this point. And I want to make sure we have a, well-informed decision on whether or not to continue and ban homes from being constructed on the property. So if we could hear from our town engineer first.
Good evening, Council. Paul Kiesler, your town engineer. Happy to answer any questions. So, where can we start?
Would you give us a summary of what is occurring at that location, what testing has been done, and any conclusions or information analysis so far?
Absolutely. So, I actually have my little timeline here. This all started back in the spring of this year. We received a couple building permit requests for some jacking of a couple houses. This is not an uncommon request. We get these every so often. Sometimes houses are built on differential soils. Sometimes you get a crack in a foundation, and then jacking is one of the ways in which you can mitigate that issue. So we received one in March and one in May. And that was processed through our building group and with Pulte to address this. As we came into the planning and zoning meeting, and at this time, keep in mind, staff does not know that there's any subsidence that's going on out there.
So the location of those two homes, Mr. Kiesler?
Two homes were the ones that were flanking the lift station on Valley Vista. Oh, sorry. Those two. So it was at the P&Z meeting where some neighbors came up and said, look, we're seeing some settlement. And staff went out and investigated what's going on here. We're seeing some settlement. And we did see some settlement. So we immediately started pulling together all of our internal resources to say, what in the world's going on here? Do we have some unconsolidated dirt from the contractor? Do we have something that is some type of differential settlement? What's going on here? So we spent June, July, August just working together with Pulte, working, and at the same time, we called up Pima County. So Pima County Wastewater, what's going on? We've just been alerted that we have some subsidence out here, and it was starting to occur. And Pima County said, yes, we've been working on that for a little bit ourselves. So they were working completely independent of us on their lift station. So we decided to get all of us together, the developer, the town, and Pulte, to address this issue. In the meantime, Pulte was in the middle of mitigating the subsidence that was happening into the houses, and it was accelerating. In that June, July area, it was really accelerating. One of the houses actually was jacked up 18 inches. So it was a matter of, through geotechnical testing, the town in Pima County, we both hired our own independent geotechnical firm, Nino and Moore. In fact, our Tucson branch representative is here. And Pulte had the Jack and Moore folks doing their testing as well. So two independent testing. And what we came across was in this area, what's just circled in red, we had a layer of existing soil that was reactive to hydro collapse. So when it became saturated, it squished together. That's what caused the grade to fail in and around the lift station. Now, that's the introduction of water into a reactive soil. So at that time, that July-August area, we, were in the middle of the development of the Tranquilo development. We decided that, geomorphically, geologically, it's very, very similar to Valley Vista. We put a stop work order on them and said, look, if that soil's over here and there's something that we're just learning, and keep in mind, about 30% of Oro Valley is built in washes. We've never experienced this before. We haven't seen this high type of hydro collapsing before. Oro Valley started in washes, started in the CDO, the Oro Valley Country Club. House has been out there 70 years, have not experienced anything like this. So we put a stop work order on Tranquilo and asked them to do a bunch of testing. So we had them go out. They did their testing. We had our expert review their testing to make sure that everything and oversee and everything was per what we would expect to see out of testing like that. Took them a while to get all that testing done, August and September. And over in Tranquilo, that testing came back that that reactive soil layer was out there as well, primarily in the wash bed area. As you go up the hills away from the wash, the soil is much more stable. So, but it was the moisture content over in Tranquilo that was both good and concerning. So when all the testing came back, it was at an acceptable moisture content. 3 to 7% is pretty much acceptable in the desert climate. They had three of the boring test pits that were in the teens, which were twice as much moisture as what should be there. So we asked, we told Pulte, okay, we'll give you a partial release, but this area, these three areas where the moisture came in high, we're still going to continue that hold. That hold remains today because my request to them, or my staff's request to them, is that we need to see what the moisture content is now. Is the moisture content going up? Is the moisture content going down, or is it staying the same? If it's staying the same or going up, we got a water source out there somewhere, somehow. If it's going down, it could have been over the monsoons in which they ponded a little bit. The water's working its way down and through, and we haven't had any precipitation in quite some time. So it would be expected if there isn't a point water source out there that indeed it was you know monsoon related as that water passes through. So that gets us to this subdivision, to the applicant's request tonight. So the applicant astutely hired the same geotech that the town's been working with to go through and test their subdivision. So they did 5 50-foot deep borings. Now keep in mind, most borings for testing of subdivisions is anywhere 10 to 20 feet. They went down and they went down deep just to make sure. All the bores on the side of the hill came back as consolidated, good hard soil. The bores, 3 bores along where the houses are essentially in the wash area, they came back exhibiting this strata in there. So at that point, I, as your town engineer, and you know, have the same concerns that the council has. We protect our citizens. Came up with some additional requirements, passed that on to the developer of 5R. Said, look, we want to make sure that we're not replicating whatever in the world's happening up in Valley Vista, and we still do not know. We know the what, we don't know the why, we don't know the what. The why is the soil became saturated and collapsed. The what is, where's the water coming from? We still do not know where the water is coming from, but we're working with Pima County Wastewater. They've been out there testing. They're continuing to test. They tested their gravity main. It came back as holding air, which means it holds water. Excuse me. They tested the soil itself to see if it had E. coli in it, because if the moisture came back with E. coli in it, it's very easy to make that reference that it is indeed the lift station. However, that E. coli test, it's not absolute, because how do you get rid of E. coli out of water? You filter it through soil. So soil could be doing that filtering action, may not. But we know that at least the gravity line is solid. Now we need to find out whether the force main is leaking or not. If the force main comes back as not leaking, then the next thing that we'll be looking at, of course, and I've already had these conversations with Mr. Abraham, is, do we have anything on the potable water side? We go back and we do testing, and we may even have to just uncover it and look, because there is a ground zero out there. When you look at the cracks in the pavement, you look at where the houses are, everything points to just in front of where the lift station is where the majority of that subsidence is. So we have some good ideas. We just don't have absolute ideas. So that's one reason the roads in Valley Vista are public, and I'm holding off as the town engineer from accepting those roads, because until we identify why, how's this water getting introduced, I'm not comfortable to take that burden on for the town. And we still need to find out for the protection of our residents. With 5R, and I can have the geotech come up here and address questions as well if you want some more specificity than what I'm providing.
No, I appreciate it. I think that's a great summary of the information that I know for myself as to, you know, how to proceed as far as in this uncertain situation of approving effectively. Well, the rezoning technically doesn't approve the construction of the homes. They have to go through a whole different process. But whether this entire area is suitable for building homes has come into question. So now, if I may, I'd like to just hear the applicant's response to this.
Yeah, that's fine. Mr. Olin.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon. I certainly appreciate the concern. And I don't mind a continuance. What I would very much appreciate are some metrics that you'd like me to meet. Because if I'm going to bring this back to you at some point, I'd like to know that there's boxes that you're looking to check. So I heard from you, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, additional soils testing. And I think I heard the same thing from Vice Mayor Barrett. So at this point, we've got a geotechnical report from the same engineer that the town relies on, saying they would be okay with this as long as we took these additional construction precautions. The town engineer has said yes, plus some additional ones, and we're okay with all that. So in our mind, we've kind of checked the boxes that we normally would in terms of getting the professional opinion, getting the town engineer's opinion. So if you could just maybe help me understand what else are you looking for when you mean additional geotechnical testing, like more holes? Does that make sense? I'm looking for a little guidance here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. I just have a question for the town engineer. I wanted to make sure I heard you correctly. Tranquilo is a mile away from Rancho Valley Vista. Yet I thought I heard you say you saw some of the same soil characteristics in Tranquilo as you saw in Rancho Valley Vista.
Councilmember Bowen, yes.
In my mind, for the public, that argues completely against there's a localized ground zero for this. This snuck up on us, and I would like to give metrics to the applicant. You see the sites? Yes. Drill everywhere where you plan to put a foundation. If you want to be safe and you don't want foundations to fall into the earth, then drill where you're going to build. Because I truly believe this completely caught us by surprise. It's in a wash area, and we can expect this. We simply just didn't take the necessary precautions before we built Rancho Valley Vista. And I see some people out here who live on Kalalua. You probably were pretty surprised to learn this. I've been asking the engineer and the town manager, when are we going to get this out? Because you probably live only 4 or 5 houses west of this. And my concern is this whole subdivision's built. And rather than, you know, easing the concerns for the people that already made a big investment in their houses, we seem to be rushing forward to build the next subdivision. This information has been out and available to council since July. I asked the town manager, every one-on-one, what's the resolution? Are we going to get a report from the engineer, the applicant, and the town engineer? Nothing. So I'm extremely disappointed with the town, thinking that this was appropriate to bring forward tonight on November 15th. I expect it from the applicant, but I think we, the town, can do better. And I would have made the motion myself if I thought I would get a second. So I third the motion, And I also would like to call the question.
Okay. Well, we need a two-thirds vote to call the question. Those in favor of calling the question, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
Nay. We'll continue. Mr. Olin.
Sure. So I think, Mr. Mayor, what I'm hearing sounds like the number one key data point here is to figure out the source of the water that's causing the problems up there. If there is a leak, for example, in the force main or potable water system or something like that, and it's isolated, then well, that'll tell us something about how to proceed on this site.
Okay, yeah, I've got some council members. So Council Member Jones-Ivey, then Vice Mayor Barrett, then Council Member Solomon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Since there is wastewater up there, and I heard the mention of E. coli, one of the things that I would like to see is for those areas that are found with subsidence, I really would like to have that water, those areas tested for what other contaminants are along with E. coli.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, Council Member Jones-Ivey, I believe that there was E. coli testing done within Valley Vista. The geotechnical engineer can verify that. There was no moisture found on our site that would suggest testing, but that's a question for the town's geotech in terms of what was tested for up there.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could add on, yeah. So, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, yes. So part of that Valley Vista testing was to determine what was in the moist soil. And the moisture came back clean of E. coli. But I'm using that as a litmus to determine whether it was freshwater or black water. The absence of E. coli suggests it's not black water, but I'm not completely sold on that just because of circumstantial evidence of where the location of the point zero of the subsidence is right by the lift station.
Paul, let me follow up with another question. What other organisms, if you suspect wastewater is involved, can be tested for that could impact human health?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, I'm not an expert in the medical aspects of this. We use E. coli as a test just to determine whether it's black water or not. We're not determining whether there's, you know, heavy metals or, you know, any other things that are in that. We're solely not for the health benefits of what the moisture content is, but whether or not it was emulating from the waste pipes. That's why we're doing that.
Mr. Melcher, did you want
to
speak?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to clarify that the county was the source of the testing for E. coli. So just to make it straight, yeah, it is the same geotechnical company and firm, but I think it's helpful in the distinction as you looked for further testing or something, just to make sure that the county had been conducting its own testing while the town had been looking for its own sources and conducting its own tests.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. Vice Mayor, then Council Member Solomon.
Thanks. Okay, I feel that what I intended by the motion amendment is being a little bit misunderstood, because what I said is no homes, roads, or buildings shall be built on the layer of soil that is known to be prone to subsidence with moisture exposure. So I think there's a bigger issue here. We definitely do need to figure out what the source of our current subsidence in Valley Vista is. But beyond that, we know that there's a layer of soil that is underneath a certain percentage of these proposed homes that is prone to subsidence with moisture. And then we're going to be adding water lines, sewage lines, and other types of moisture to the area in order to build homes. And so even if we line those with, you know, concrete, and even if we line them with plastic, that doesn't last forever. And so there will be a day when the town will own water lines, you know, someday in the future, and the town would potentially own roads, and those linings begin to break down in some way or fail in some way, or those engineering solutions, and then, you know, plastic breaking down, et cetera, and then water could still get into this layer of soil. And then the town would then, you know, be responsible for those water lines and things. So as we were just discussing all of this, it just felt to me like, at what point do we say, you know, that the soil that we know is prone to settling is not soil that's appropriate for homes. And in the current zoning of this land, it would have been fields down there, right? So subsidence for fields would not have been a major issue, but subsidence for homes or roads that the town owns are a major issue. And so I think that's more the benchmark, is that I, like Council Member Bowen said, I mean, every home we need to determine that it's potentially being built on firm soil and foundations, and that this layer isn't present. So that's kind of what I was going for. And while I had the floor, I wanted to say for one second that I wanted to speak to the broader general plan issue for just a moment. I personally am very disappointed that this is not going to be a middle school, because a lot of middle school kids in Oro Valley drive outside of Oro Valley to attend middle school, and I think it would be wonderful if we had a middle school here in Oro Valley. And I don't take a general plan amendment lightly. I don't think I've ever taken a general plan amendment lightly, as Mr. Oling can attest. But you know, I've done a lot of thinking and research about the situation with the enrollment and things like that, and I just don't believe that the numbers are there for this to become a school at this point. So then what I'm kind of looking at is what would be a good alternative to for the neighbors and for the situation of this land. And so I do feel like homes, as a broader question of could homes go on this as a general plan amendment, I feel like yes, that homes would be a potential good use of this land. It's just more a question of making sure that they're all built on a firm foundation.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, this is a, as mentioned, a highly rare and unusual situation. We have many homes in Oro Valley built in washes, on washes, on slopes, near slopes and washes, and they're not all subsiding. There's no settlement. It's a rare combination of a given soil layer and an abundance of moisture. And there's, in my opinion, no way, unfortunately, to give the applicant a criteria of certainly not one of testing every single lot with a borehole. I mean, the geotech science doesn't say 10 feet over you're going to run into a major, you know, issue. But what it is a very dynamic situation. First, they have to find the source of the water, and then determine, is it localized? Is it a fluke? Is it something? There have been rare cases where we actually have surface water, an underground stream discovered in a most unlikely place, and that's also in Oro Valley, and it's very localized. It affects one house, and it doesn't affect either neighbor. So these are things that kind of need to be left to the engineering division and the testing people. And I think that it's obvious that at this point we wouldn't be comfortable moving forward with homes on this site. But on the other hand, it's something that I think the applicant and our engineering division is going to have to work through as far as what's the next step in testing. And it's all going to be based on their findings of, you know, cumulative effect of the findings. Like right now they're concentrating on where is the water source, Once they isolate that, then they'll have a lot more information as to what do they need to look for, where do they need to look for it, and what type of testing to do that. So at this point, I think that the current motion basically is probably fine to continue. And I wish we could give more guidance to them, but I don't think that's even possible at this point.
I'd like to check in with Mr. Olin, and for the record, Councilmember Nicholson joined us at 7:40. Mr. Olin, you asked for some metrics. I've heard some metrics, bores for each of the lots that are on the east side of this development that are adjacent to the wash. I've heard, you know, in consultation with our engineering staff. Do you need further?
No, sir, Mr. Mayor. I think I understand my marching orders well enough.
And I just want to, you know, I support the proposal, Mr. Olin, once these questions are resolved. So
thank you, sir.
Appreciate you being here this evening. We have a motion on the table. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. I think we'll, Councilmember Nicholson.
I just want to mention I was listening in. I got off work just recently. I listened in, and I tried voting earlier, but I couldn't get in through the phone.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Nicholson. I appreciate it. Or Councilmember Nicholson. I think we'll take a 10-minute break. So we'll return at about 7:55. Okay. We'll resume the regular session. Mr. Standish, if you'd read item 2.
Public hearing, resolution number R23-44, request for the vacation of existing unused Tangerine Road town right-of-way, east and west of Water Harvest Way, specifically west of parcel 223-02-0450 and east of parcel 223-02-0460.
Public Works Director and Town Engineer, Mr. Kiesler, will present this item.
Mr. Mayor, Council, thank you. I have a very short presentation. It's a very straightforward item. It's really a council discretionary item. So let's just jump on into it. So I want to orient the council and the public to where we're talking about. So here we got the Oro Valley Marketplace, Tangerine Road, the Oro Valley Hospital, Innovation Park. So there were three sections of Tangerine Road that were widened, had widened and enhanced right-of-ways per the development of the Rancho Vistoso PAD. Those right-of-ways were widened because there was an envisioning of a grade-separated interchange when the PAD was being put together back in the mid-80s. The development of Rancho Vistoso, of course, happened at a much less dense fashion than was originally planned, generates a lot less traffic, and there is no foreseeable need to ever have a grade separated interchange either at Oracle, at Innovation, or at First in Rancho Vistoso. So Tangerine Road was dedicated to ADOT by the developer. Some years later, Tangerine Road was transferred from ADOT to the town of Oro Valley for operation and maintenance and essentially ownership. The bulk of Tangerine Road is a 300-foot right-of-way. So what it did was it created a lot of extraneous land. Now, ADOT themselves hung on to, at this intersection, four parcels. They hung on these parcels to go ahead and sell. And sell they have. They've sold those parcels, all four of them, matter of fact. The two parcels that were mentioned in our resolution here, 22302, 0450 and 0460 have been purchased by the Oro Valley Marketplace. So the Oro Valley Marketplace, our applicant is Oro Valley Lifestyle Center, LLC, care of Mr. Jim Horvath with Town West Realty, Inc., who is the owner of the Oro Valley Marketplace. They have filed a petition with the town to vacate these two out pieces of right-of-way. So for their ultimate development plans that we've seen since, I believe, the summertime. The right-of-way vacation process is very straightforward. It is the process is designated in Town Code Section 7-7. And if we could clear, thank you. And also, it's mandated and controlled by state law, and that's ARS 287202 and 287205. It can only be granted by the town council and the municipality through a public hearing process. The decision to grant the request of the vacation shall solely be at the discretion of the town council. Just running through the process real quick here, the application all associated necessary paperwork and the associated filing fee of $780, that all happened. All the necessary clearances for public utilities in that area have all been obtained. For this hearing, there's a series of required notification of advertising and posting on site. That was all conducted per code. And I, your town engineer, concur that the two areas in yellow being requested are extraneous to the 300-foot necessary right-of-way of Tangerine Road and therefore do not create a public benefit. So very quickly here, council, your pleasure. You've got really three options ahead of you. You can approve tonight's item and vacate the right-of-way to Town West. You can go ahead and sell the right-of-way, but there is state statute that requires that you you can only sell it at the purchase price, which we believe was likely less than $10 as it was a dedication, after you incur all your publication costs. And then, of course, the third option is you can choose to do nothing at all. With that, I'm happy to take any questions. Again, this is a very straightforward process, and it's really a decision by town council.
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler, for your straightforward presentation. There is a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I'm going to open the public hearing at this time. If you would like to speak to this item, this is your opportunity to do so. There's blue cards in the back of the room. I don't have any blue cards at this time for this item. Seeing no blue cards, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I move to approve resolution number R23-44, request for the vacation of existing unused Tangerine Road town right-of-way east and west of Water Harvest Way, specifically west of parcel 223-02-0450 and east of parcel 223-02-0460.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Discussion? Vice Mayor Barrett and then Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. I'm in agreement with the request. However, I would like to just put on the record, if we could go back to the slide on the maps, I'd just like to ask about the existing multi-use path, which is certainly of benefit to the town and crosses that requested right-of-way vacation property. What is the plan with that existing multi-use path?
If we can, Mayor, Vice Mayor, the graphics here are not at that level. You can see on the north-south stretch of that path, I believe that path is already on the parcel that is owned by the Oro Valley Marketplace. It's there by easement. It's actually a public path that's in there by easement. And then that easement can continue through this requested parcel as well. Once it becomes a parcel, you can make that condition of approval that all easements necessary for that MUP be provided.
Okay. Can I ask the applicant to clarify what the plan was with that MUP? I understood it's to stay, but I just want to make it clear and just get it on the record.
Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I'm going to try, and when I mess it up, Rob Longacre will come up. Are you speaking about the piece that you can kind of see in the aerial?
Well, I thought so. There's okay. Two pieces. There's the one that comes off of Tangerine Road.
Yeah. There's a drainage where so that requested right-of-way vacation. That's a drainage. But then to the west is the multi-use path. Yep. And at least in the site plan or design, it shows that there's a connection or that that will continue.
Yes. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, that is, I believe, subject to an easement, as I think the town engineer just indicated, and that will continue. That's part of the loop trail.
I think the pointy part of the requested
Councilmember
row.
Nicholson.
Mayor. I'm sorry, Mayor. The pointy part of the requested row vacation, I think that's pointing to a culvert.
This
drainage.
Is a coal. That's
right,
drainage.
That's a drainage. The trail is to the west, so to your right, I think,
right,
my left.
I'm afraid to. There we go. And then it goes up there.
Right? Oh, but it goes up to Tangerine.
It goes under Tangerine, yeah, because I write it. Yep.
Yeah.
That will continue. That is the public.
That's the one. Okay. I don't know if that one is part of the actual loop. I think that might be. Town of Oro Valley Trail. It's you know, the one that connects up to Tangerine Road. I think the loop kind of, I don't know where the delineation is, but I think the loop kind of goes over and then underneath, but this is where the path comes on. So I just want to make sure if we need any easements or anything that we get that covered.
And I can respond to that. Rob Longacre, WLB Group, you're correct. That piece actually does not, is not part of the loop. The loop is the main path that the green line that is on the western part of the property that goes to the west, but not that piece that goes up to Tangerine. It's not part of the loop, actually.
So do we need to maintain an easement as part of this transfer in order to maintain public access to that trail?
I believe so, since it's on the property. Yeah. Yeah. The path is there. I think an easement would need to be in place through that property to maintain that in its current location.
Then I'd like to make a request to amend the motion to include an easement for that public trail.
Second that.
Well, I made the motion.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm fine with that. It's a little bit unclear to me. I mean, it's shown in their... and the drawings, clearly a connection to Tangerine. I don't. Outside of that right of way to the west is what? What's the property that's not?
That's Pima County.
It's Pima County.
So the, as my recollection of the loop, is that it's partially on Pima County. It's partially on the land owned by Oro Valley Marketplace, but it's now a public path where there's a public easement.
So don't know in the drawings when it shows, so it definitely shows the connection to Tangerine, to the loop. I don't know if it's on the applicants on this right-of-way property or if it's been pushed onto Pima County property. Either way, is an easement required?
Mayor, members of the council, we believe that that is actually not on the property. We had a title report done. There's no easement. We think it's on Pima County property.
Yeah.
So I think what we'd be comfortable with is, if you're okay with this, is a motion to abandon with the acknowledgement that we're going to research this with the town, and if, in fact, the trail is on our property, we will handle it accordingly. We don't think it is. We think it's on Pima County property. And our title report indicates that.
Okay. And you're, just to be clear, the development plan that was approved does include that is staying, that there will be a connection to Tangerine of
yes.
that path.
Mayor, members of the council, it shows that as an existing and it will continue as an existing.
Okay. Thanks. I'd be fine with that. I just, I want to make sure that it's kind of on record that connection is staying. I know it's kind of near the edge of the property, so there may be some misunderstanding. I can't quite tell. It looks to me like it might be, but a survey would be more accurate. So, yeah, thank you.
Okay, so you asked for an amendment. Are you withdrawing that amendment?
Can I ask for an amendment that if there needs to be an easement here that that would be, that the right-of-way would be subject to that easement.
I'll accept that.
I'll accept that.
Thanks, Councilmember Green. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. A question for the town engineer regarding the size of the parcels. What is the size of the parcel to the west?
Oh, gosh. It's on the legal description in the packet. I'll have to go get my iPad, too.
I know the it's 2.3 acres. And okay. What's the size of the parcel to the east? It's 0.8 acres. Mm-hmm. The point I'd like to make, there have been some arguments made by the public and the applicant. There's been no concessions by the town for this project. This is 3.2 acres worth of land. If you look at the development plan, this is going to be parking lots and apartment buildings. The combined size of parcel 22302-0450 and the right-of-way that we're being asked to vacate tonight, that's 35% of Area 1. So this is a big concession. I agree with it, but the public should know that this was always hanging out there. They were going to get a significant part of Area 1 and Area 2 for effectively free. And we've done all these gyrations to get a little bit of recreation area into Area 3. And that's just been enormously wasteful for this project as interest rates have just gone up like this. So we're all participants in the process, not just the council, but the applicant as well. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any more questions, discussion? Motion's on the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Standish, item 3.
Public hearing, discussion of possible action regarding two items related to proposed revisions in the Oro Valley Marketplace located at the southwest corner of Tangerine and Oracle Road. The two items include item A, ordinance number O23-05, adopting the planned area development amendment, and item B, revised master development plan conceptual site plan.
Okay, principal planner Mr. Spaeth will present this item.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, thank you. Members of the council, members of the audience, my name is Michael Spaeth, principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. As Mr. Standish indicated, our purpose for this item is to consider two related applications to proposed revisions in the Oro Valley Marketplace. The first is item A, which is a planned area development amendment, and the second is a revised master development plan and conceptual site plan. Both items overlap and involve changes to the entertainment district. These revisions are focused only on the area highlighted in yellow on the right-hand image in the screen, and there are two key changes that staff focused on during the review. Council previously approved an off-site credit within the entertainment district to meet the open space requirements for the approved apartments in areas 1 and 4. This approval was for the entire entertainment district area. The first key change tonight is that there is an applicant request to change this credit by phasing the improvements in the entertainment district into three phases. The focus from staff was on whether or not the phase lines are appropriate. The second key change is whether or not, the type, quantity, and location of amenities in each phase are appropriate as well. As with all PAD amendment applications, this is a discretionary ask of town council. To act on item B this evening, item A must first be approved, and these items are being presented for discussion and possible action. So just some quick background. As you know, four items were approved by town council in October and November of last year that were necessary to enable development of the site proposed as the applicant's design. Ultimately resulted in the revised plan that included the four development areas shown on the right-hand side of the screen. The applicant's requests tonight are specific to items C and D that were approved previously, as you can show C in the highlighted box. So just as a reminder for folks on what was previously approved, the full entertainment district included all of the amenities shown on the screen. And part of that original approval was that there would be a public-private agreement relative to the construction costs for this area. If there was an agreement, the entertainment district would be developed in one full swoop. Per the applicant, there is not an agreement, and discussions toward one do not appear to be moving forward, So they're bringing back this revised plan before you this evening with a plan to address the open space requirements for the apartments in areas 1 and 2 to be able to move forward with development elsewhere in the center. As I mentioned, there were two key focal points with the revised applications, and the first was that there was going to be some proposed phasing for the improvements and installation of amenities in the entertainment district. For reference, in the graphic at the right are what we're calling two bookends, if you will. They're outlined in red. The one on the bottom of the screen is the courtyard and restaurant cluster right along Water Harvest Way, and the one to the north is the overflow parking or event space immediately next to the movie theater. So phase one, as proposed by the applicant, is shown here in yellow, is approximately 2.9 acres in size, and is larger than what is required for the open space for the apartments in areas 1 and 4, which was 1.7 acres. So they're using that acreage to address that open space requirement as the credit being proposed this evening. There is a high probability that only phase one will be built, and staff reviewed these revised applications with that context in mind. Phase two is shown here in orange, is just a little under an acre, and is only required if the apartments or hotels are ever built in development area 3, which are shown by the orange boxes there. And this area really represents the space that would be used to meet the code required rec requirements, like a pool or a playground for either the apartments or hotels. Phase three then would be all three colors, the yellow, orange, and gray, and really represents the full open space design as currently approved for the entertainment district. Again, per the applicant, there needs to be a public-private partnership for the full phase three to come to fruition, to cost share those improvements. Again, the first key focal point for staff was whether the proposed phase lines seem appropriate, including what they're now proposing as the credit for the off-site open space that they need for apartments in areas 1 and 4. Lastly, I'd like to point out that the restaurants, the courtyard, and event space are not tied to any of the phases, but are rather market-driven. Currently, in the PAD amendment application, there is a requirement that the courtyard must be installed with the first restaurant that comes in. During the Planning and Zoning Commission, the applicant requested that that be removed, and commission did vote to remove that requirement. Staff does have concerns, and our recommendation to commission reflected our concern that without the courtyard being tied to the phase one amenities, you really lacked that synergy that is really needed to activate this area as a true activity center, which is why we recommended that that condition be put in the first place. So I just want to keep that in mind as we move forward. The second key change, as I mentioned, is the type, location, and number of amenities in each phase and whether or not the mix seems appropriate. While there are three proposed phases altogether that would achieve that original intent for the overall entertainment district, phases two and three may not happen. And again, with that in mind, staff focused primarily on phase one as a standalone option to make sure that it has as much amenitization as possible. It is worth noting that all of the amenities proposed in this area in all three phases are extra amenities, as all code required amenities are provided in each respective area in development area 1 and 4. Staff worked with the applicant to concentrate as many amenities to the south as close to the restaurant and courtyard area as possible, again with the aim to really kind of activate that space and kind of get that synergy to make it successful in the future. Phase one does not require any improvements to the drainage, no undergrounding of the drainage, and you can see that the amenities were really kept on the periphery to minimize disturbance to that existing channel. Again, the applicant is here for a presentation and will go into more detail during their presentation. For phase two, just quickly again, this is only required if apartments or hotels are built in development area 3. And you can see on the graphic here, it's really just the area that would be used to meet the code required rec requirements for either apartments or hotels, should those be constructed. And then lastly, phase three is, again, very similar to the currently approved full entertainment district, though it does actually have several new amenities. This design does require undergrounding of the drainage, and according to the applicant, this phase is only possible if there is that public-private partnership reached in the future. Again, more detail will be provided during the applicant's presentation. And just quickly, I wanted to leave you with a comparison of what's in the existing approved entertainment district on the image on the left and the proposed phase three entertainment district on the right. You can see that they do have a lot of the same amenities. In fact, there are several more amenities included in the applicant's proposed phase three design. So in summary, the requester before you this evening is the applicant seeks a path forward for development within the center without the existence of that public-private partnership to help cost share improvements within the entertainment district. And the request really involves two key changes: phasing of improvements to the previously approved credit within that entertainment district, and then also the type changes to the type, number, and location of amenities in each phase. If all three are constructed, the design is essentially consistent with what was approved as part of the full entertainment district. However, there is a high likelihood that only phase one is developed, and again, staff focused primarily on that as a standalone concept, given that likelihood. Again, I'd like to point out that staff's recommendation to the Planning and Zoning Commission was that the courtyard be tied to the first restaurant, because we think the courtyard and the amenities really tie together to activate this space as the true activity node that we hope it will be. But Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation was to remove that condition, ultimately recommending conditional approval of both items A and B. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That concludes my presentation. I will just remind Council that to act on item B, item A must be approved this evening. And the council, or the applicant, of course, is here with a presentation as well.
Thank you, Mr. Spaeth.
Thank you.
So we'll invite Ms. Sylvan with Lazarus and Sylvan representing the applicant. We'll present this evening.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Carrie Sylvan with Lazarus and Sylvan. Also with me tonight from Town West are Jim Horvath and Toby Horvath, and from WLB Group, Rob Longacre and Liz Madsen. Staff has done a great job of explaining thoroughly why we're here. I did want to point out that we have been working with the town in a level of public-private partnership to move this project forward since 2019-2020, and there's been a lot of back and forth. When we use the term public-private partnership relative to the entertainment district, it was more the economic development agreement that was entirely within your purview to make a decision on. We understand where we are right now, and we are ready to move forward and excited to move forward and are really hoping to move forward this evening. So our goal tonight is to gain approval of really the phase one for the center so that we can submit our plans for the hotel and Oracle and finalize our plans for the apartments, both on Tangerine and Oracle. We want to do those at the same time. And bring those forward as quickly as possible, get people on the site, and get all of our retailers healthy and happy, some healthier and happier, others just extra healthy and happy, so that we can get even some more revenue into the town, which is the goal. And that's where we think we're aligned. As staff has indicated, the apartments, as you are all aware, require two different types of recreation. One is amenities, one is open space. We are meeting the recreation on the individual apartment sites. I'm sorry, the amenities. It's the open space area that a portion of it is within that center area. So back during the summer when we realized we needed to kind of rethink at least a phase one, we decided we did want to phase this so that if, in fact, there is a funding source that becomes available to help with that drainage, we can bring forward phase three. What this is just showing you is the green is the acreage on the side, which is about 2.9 acres that is available for us to amenitize. We then worked with staff on some ideas for those amenities, and this is the phase one that staff alluded to was presented to the Planning Commission. I know most of you either were at the Planning Commission or you went and watched it. So I can come back to this if you have some questions, but just big picture, we talked about the activated space up to the north, the restaurant cluster and courtyard. That courtyard partly needs the drainage to be covered where it's located right now. And so that's what was causing us some concerns with the timing. That's a very large expense, and I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. So as we worked through this, what we talked to staff about was keeping most of the amenities down on the south area. Some concerns that we've heard since the Planning Commission meeting and even at the Planning Commission were things like we're showing a bocce ball, cornhole, the horseshoe pits, and the tables for chess and checkers. And they're open to the public, but most people don't carry the bocce balls or the chess pieces in the trunks of their cars. So it likely is more of an amenity for the apartment dwellers and maybe the hotel's guests if they're there. And really what we want to do is focus on getting people, you know, from the loop, even the public, and kind of engaging in the area. So we have an idea that I'll show you in a minute. A lot of this involved keeping the sidewalks that are there. For those of you who have been there, there's beautiful sidewalks, but they are sidewalks, so you can't bike or otherwise use that as a connection. We did add some parkour, so the idea is to bring people out and do some exercise and those kinds of amenities. So this is something that we worked with staff on, again, as we heard some of the concerns. And what we also heard was that the courtyard was really important. And as I said before, the issue with the courtyard was largely having to underground some drainage. So we're trying to figure out that courtyard space. So a couple of things that we're suggesting tonight that will continue. I can't remember if I mentioned this before, but native plant education all up and down. There's a lot of native vegetation in this area that now we are retaining. And so there's an opportunity for some education identification signs. We're continuing the parkour, and we're willing to put some more parkour spaces. There is artwork and there are some benches, but we want to add more. One suggestion too is one of those swinging benches, making sure that they're either under trees or somewhere near the shade. What we're really excited about is the opportunity, again, in working with staff and a few others, over on the west side, what we're willing to do is take out the sidewalk that's there and actually continue a 10-foot multi-use path. And the idea here is to really engage. I know at some of our very first meetings, there was a lot of discussion about how do we pull bicycles, right, and get people into the site. And I think our response was, wow, we're really nervous about that because we don't really want cars interacting. And as we were creating this as a more activated space, we had some concerns with bikes, pedestrians, kids, all of that mixing. I think what this gives us an opportunity to do is acknowledge the investment in the loop and the investment that the town has made as well. Connecting up to Tangerine, it already connects. But it allows us to bring the whole multi-use path up there. And then the par course, we would work with staff to create the par course stops to really activate, whether you're on the bike or you're walking, you can stop and do some chin-ups if you want to do chin-ups on our par course. The dog that we want to make this pet friendly, so the dog waste opportunities. I think the last round we had pictures of lots of different dogs because people like different breeds. We only left one in here this time. The other big change that we had heard that the courtyard was pretty important. So what we did was we moved the courtyard over between the two restaurants over by the keg. It required us, we're going to be using part of the parking lot as well, and we will work with staff. We have enough parking. and create that courtyard. And because it doesn't have the additional price tag of having to underground the drainage, we are comfortable with the condition that the courtyard come out with the very first of this restaurant cluster. So we know that that was important. And again, as you're looking at the Loop and Water Harvest Way, you'll also see that we're talking about doing really more robust crossings in those areas so people can come in. We'll work with the town on signage, entryway, to really acknowledge that as you use the Loop, and I do ride this section of the Loop every Saturday that I go riding, which is not every Saturday. I put that in there on purpose. Every Saturday that I go riding, we ride down in this area, and it gives you an opportunity to step off. The bathrooms are there, and then you can engage and even continue. Use that to go up to Tangerine and engage with the project, or use the Loop that goes around, as Vice Mayor Barrett indicated. These are the not pretty plans that show you the same thing, but it really is the same thing. So this is the new courtyard plan that, again, puts the courtyard in this area. I learned from the Planning Commission. Thanks, Mike. And then this is the old plan that shows where the courtyard is in the area. So we did the new plan first, the old plan second, and then if that got really confusing, then we went ahead and put them side by side, which is, of course, even more confusing. So the old plan is on the left with the courtyard in the middle, and the right side shows the natural wash. It also gives the restaurant that's across the wash an opportunity to have a patio looking out on the natural drainage way and the natural vegetation, as well as the other two restaurants having the courtyard area. So we are excited to move this project forward. We'd like to do that tonight. We're hopeful that our revised plan addresses some of the concerns we've heard and will allow this to move forward so we can get the project going. We respectfully request your approval this evening of the Phase 1 plan with those changes that we've proposed. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Before we go to questions, I'm going to open the public hearing for this item. And I'd like to invite Mr. Rob Wonsack, if he'd come forward, if he'd please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Good evening. Yeah, my name is Rob Wonsack. I am a resident of Oro Valley, Arizona. So it's been 15 years since this marketplace opened. It's been about 4 years, going on 5 years, since Town West acquired it. And it seems like we're moving backwards. We've had Dick's Sporting Goods leave. Best Buy's gone. Pedigo's, I don't think they even lasted a year. They're gone. I don't know. Red Lobster is like on a shoestring. Tuck Tuck Tie is struggling. They're all struggling. So it's like, while we're patting ourselves on the shoulder for vacating a right-of-way, why don't we get really bold and move this thing along? You know, one thing I've never heard, I don't know if you remember this or not, this was the proposed on January of 2019. This was the economic impact. It was $165 million annually. And so this was 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago. So it's like, well, and what have we done? We really haven't done anything. So I'd suggest that Council really get down with it and approve this and move this thing along so we can have some recreation and restaurants and shopping in Oro Valley to go to. Thank you.
Devin Sloan.
Tall guy. Mr. Mayor, Ms. Vice Mayor, Town Council, and staff. First of all, I'd like to honor the mayor for his great presentation at the State of the Town Luncheon last month. Good job in recapping all the accomplishments of the town this past year. I'm looking forward to participating in the planning process for the 10-year plan, Oro Valley's Path Forward, planning together for our future. In light of that, I'd like for the town council members to also move forward. As the mayor stressed in his comments last month, please let's move forward with a partnership on the reimagination of Oro Valley Village Center. Since 2019, the town has been discussing this project, and after many neighborhood meetings, study sessions, council meetings, you all approved the amended plan Town West presented last November. Town West has been ready to go with this project for 4 years, and they have been planning together with this town for our future. They've revitalized the current marketplace with various businesses, from restaurants to bookstores. But those new businesses need partnership with the town to survive. As noted in the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting last month, businesses are struggling. They're struggling because this council is not moving forward with a partnership. The mayor talked about the innovation of our town in his talk last month. He noted responsiveness to citizens and the promise to continue this momentum. I know you all feel that way about our town. We have a lot to do, and we can do it. You all approved the number of hotels and apartments, the parking, the open space, the retail establishments, the entertainment district, and even the lighting. Continue that approval with an actual partnership to complete this project. Please be responsive to this citizen to continue this momentum and take this path forward as we plan together for our future. In Jim Williams' new book, Oro Valley, the First 50 Years, purchasable at Steam Pump Ranch on Saturdays, the mayor said that one of the negatives of Oro Valley was the, quote, absence of a developed downtown. The Oro Valley Village Center reimagination could be as close to that as Oro Valley will ever get to a downtown. So let's get it out of the negative column and make it a big plus for Oro Valley by partnering with Town West. 3, 2, 1.
Wow. Nicely done, Devin. I don't know how you did that. Carolyn Curran. And if you could please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Now I need to move it back up. My name is Caroline Curran, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. I'm simply here to read a letter on behalf of Sam Levitz, the owner of Sam Levitz Furniture. He's a tenant of the Oro Valley Marketplace. It is to you, sir, Mr. Joe Winfield. I'm writing this letter to update you on our concerns regarding our Oro Valley Marketplace Ashley Furniture Store. We've been looking forward to the development of the central recreation space, as well as the continued build out of the planned apartments and hotel. However, over the last 2 years, none of that has been started, and the shopping center is appearing more like an empty, dying center. This non-development has diminished our sales to the point that we will not be able to keep this store open unless we see some progress in the very near future. To this point, we have discussed a sale of our Ashley stores to the corporate entity, Ashley Furniture Home Stores, and they have declined the offer for just the Oro Valley location due to the lack of tenant development. We feel that the overall plan put forth by the landlords, if mostly completed in the next year or so, will help to drive repeat traffic to the center and create a successful retail location that can thrive and grow. Joe, my intent is to make our Oro Valley location a successful and profitable store. However, without the support of the town of Oro Valley, that could be impossible to accomplish. Please help us to get this great property to be all that it is intended to be. Thank you. Sam R. Levitz, Sam Levitz Furniture owner. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other blue cards. This is your opportunity to speak for this particular item, if you'd like to do so. See no one getting up out of their seats. I'm going to close the public hearing. Again, per our parliamentary rules, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion. I move to approve ordinance number 023-05, adopting the revised planned area development amendment based on finding the request in general conformance with the overall design of the previously approved entertainment district.
Second.
And I'll state that, as been mentioned, Town West has been working on this since 2019. The economic impact to the town is very large. The benefits to all our residents for the improved services and new services is very large. They have constantly revised the plans based on public, staff, and council input. And I believe the plan they presented tonight that incorporates a multi-use path, which is going to cost the developers quite a bit of money, is going to be highly utilized. It's going to be a great addition, which will help move people from the multi-use path up to the businesses. I know someone had asked once, you know, what can we possibly do to help the businesses? And the response is very simple. They need more bodies. They have to have people there shopping, dining, drinking, going to the theater. And until that happens, there's not going to be any improvement in the situation of the majority of the businesses that are struggling to survive. And I believe that it's critical, as mentioned by some of the speakers, that we act tonight and move this project along. They're ready to break ground with hotels and apartments that'll provide some immediate relief to the tenants. And by the way, provide a good amount of one-time sales tax, construction sales tax revenue to the town, and of course, continuing sales tax revenue month after month.
Okay, there's a motion on the table. Are there questions, discussion? Okay, Mr.
I apologize for interrupting, Mayor. I just wanted to clarify in terms of understanding the motion. So, Member Solomon, was a motion to include the changes to the courtyard position as presented tonight,
yes,
as well as the multi-use path, and removing the other amenities that were as part of, that's what's described in the ordinance. So it's approving, yes, what you heard tonight, essentially.
Yes. Okay. Approving the PAD as presented this evening.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Okay. This is changing by the day because just yesterday I met with the applicant and they presented something I really liked that had kind of a play area near the existing tuck-tuck-tie area. And the thing that I liked about that is because that's by businesses that already exist, and it kind of activates those existing restaurants and businesses and movie theater space right along there. My concern with the courtyard and the restaurants that are there is that that may be something that doesn't materialize in the future if the market demand isn't there. And I feel like the same concern from the planning and zoning meeting that the commission members removed the requirement for the courtyard because they felt that according to Mr. Horvath, that the cost of the courtyard would make it prohibitive to bring in a restaurant. I think that left it as kind of a strange space with, you know, the bocce ball and things with no courtyard. And so it's about trying to find something that will sort of work together to still accomplish the purposes. So I kind of feel like a couple of things I want to mention that I'd like to see, and I want to hear what the council thinks about it. One, I'm wondering if Ms. Sylvan can present the tuck-tuck-tie slide, and this would be, or the slide that goes with the other play area, but this would be not with the courtyard, but instead of the courtyard, and something that we could have right now. The other thing is, I'd like to see stage 3 removed entirely from the approval, because since it requires public investment by the town to the tune of more than $6 million probably, I think that if that is ever going to happen, that we should re-go through the process and have conversations with existing town residents then about what it is that they'd like to see. So I think by saying, well, this is going to be stage 3, it kind of gives an expectation to our residents that may not be fulfilled. So I'd kind of like to have stage 3 removed. And I'd like to see that, personally, I don't know, maybe they've already done this calculation, but I'd kind of like to make sure that the total investment is at least equal to the value of the 1.7 acres of additional apartment space. That's something that we do in residential areas when we're, as the council's familiar with, we went through our code recently for our residential areas rec code, and that's something that we do if we're going to provide some extra lots or something, then we provide a calculation about what that land is worth, and then the developer will provide enhanced amenities or sometimes an in-lieu fee to the town. And I'm not suggesting that we do that for all apartment complexes moving forward, but I just think that kind of the fairness, you know, are we in the ballpark of making sure that the amenities and the things that are being provided are at least, you know, equal to about what that value would be of the 1.7 acres? Because that's something we already kind of have in our rec code. So those are my thoughts. I came in here tonight thinking that we were going to be presented with the play center that I was presented with yesterday. And so I'm a little surprised in terms of the courtyard being important. For me, I'm concerned about it because I don't know if there's the demand there to build that courtyard. And I do think that anything that we put in should be tied to the apartments, because the whole point of the rec area and the space and the credit is related to the apartments. Restaurants don't require open space. Apartments do. And so that's why I think that tying it to the first restaurant, I'm worried that, you know, that's just saying we won't get a restaurant, we won't get a courtyard. So if Ms. Silva wouldn't mind showing the play space. I'm not married to the concept. I just want to pitch it for the rest of the council to at least be able to see that. Yeah.
Sure. Members of the council, can you pull up my presentation, please? Thank you. I can go through the whole presentation again, but I figured you just wanted this. This was a concept that we had been working on. Again, it's instead of the courtyard, it continues everything that we've been talking about relative to the multi-use path, the park course, the bringing people in. So this is up in the area to the north. You can see the activated space, the proposed overflow. So the movie theater and Tuk Tuk Thai are kind of over in this area over here. What we were talking about was doing kind of a passive play area. And what we mean by that is, and you can see some of the ideas. I'm loving the fact I know how to do this now. So hunker down. So what this is meant to be is an area where kids can play on. These are examples actually from a park in kind of the northwest area. So you'll see vegetation and other boulders and other things that are representative of that area. We would be looking for stuff representative of southern Arizona. But an area where people, before they go see a movie or as they're having dinner, can have an opportunity to have their kids in a passive play area. There's also, you can see the shade sail with some seating in the area and some ramadas. I mean, some of the questions were whether or not similar, right, to the area down to the south, will people really go into that area? Is it activatable? I might have made up that word, but is that really going to attract people as opposed to kind of that courtyard area with the restaurants? So this was something that was discussed. These were the kinds of concepts that we were putting forward. We are comfortable with this or the courtyard proposal that we made this evening, either one of those. I think that addressed that question on the phase three, which is the entire entertainment center. So the reason that we wanted to keep that available as part of the approval is that there can be other funding sources that become available. There are sometimes we saw it during COVID in different arenas where federal funding sources became available for certain things. We just thought if that's something that we as a partnership with the town identify a funding source that allows us to actually underground that drainage area and create that amenity space, that should be something that's available in the future. Those economics might look different. I know where we were right at this moment in time, which was the 9.5 total. That might change. There may be a different funding source. That was the reason we wanted to maintain the phase three. Not that we're suggesting we heard the answer, which was no to what we proposed. We were just thinking there may be a reality in the future. As to the value, I don't entirely know how to do that, and I would suggest that this is an area where, again, we are meeting all of the amenity space on the site. We are asking for, what was already approved was the 1.7 acres in the middle. This is, still our property. We're not asking to use somebody else's property for that, and I just want to reiterate as part of the answer to this question that we really are ready to move forward, and we really don't want to have another continuance tonight, which is why we did all the work on the various options. So we're comfortable with what we originally proposed, and we're comfortable with the two options that we've talked about this evening.
Vice Mayor.
Okay. Just one quick follow-up. You mentioned being ready. Can you share with us your timeline regarding the apartments?
Sure. I'm going to start with the hotel because the hotel, by your conditions, is required right before the apartments. So the hotel is designed. It is almost ready to come in for site development permitting and then the building permitting. The apartments are almost through with the private design side. That takes a little bit of time. They're a little bit behind the hotel. But the goal is to get the apartments in to the town's review shortly thereafter. When you have to do the site development and then the building development for either one of those components, that's usually a 12 to 18 month process with the town. So what we're hoping is that the hotel can move forward if we can start and hopefully get that going in that 10 to 12 month time period. So we would be working with staff on the permitting. The apartments would probably be a few months behind that.
So you think within 2 to 3 years, you'd be maybe breaking ground?
We hope sooner. We're hoping 18 months from submittal. And we're hoping that's only a few months down the road. But that would be conservative. Yes, we hope sooner for everybody's sake.
Well, Councilmember Solomon and then Councilmember Jones Ivy.
Yes. That schedule is as quick as possible, considering the government approvals, the town approvals, and all to break ground. Is that not correct?
Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, yes.
All right, so as fast as you can. My other comment is regarding the value of the apartment space and recreational space. That's a new ordinance that was just passed. I don't believe this project falls under it. It's been in this stage for 3 years now, and
that ordinance is not, well, passed. It has 30 days to go into effect, so it's not yet in effect, and this application predates it.
If That's right. So we really don't need to be having that conversation, plus the fact that, once again, this overall project is valued at over $300 million. That's a heck of a lot of construction sales tax, and it's going to be a heck of a lot of reoccurring sales tax revenue and benefits to the community. So I think the benefits to the town, the residents, being able to collect the taxes, provide for all our services, police, roads, parks, and rec, far, far outweighs any potential, you can't even use the word contributions tax, because we're not making any contributions. Remember, this whole phasing here is 100% paid for by the developer. There's no town money or concessions involved in this.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Sylvan, I want to voice the same concern that our vice mayor voiced, and I remember meeting with you, and it was a total different presentation, and it seems to me, if I recall, I'm looking at a third rendition of a proposed plan. So I really want to feel real comfortable with what exactly is going to happen. And I got to tell you, I'm not sure. I'm not at that comfort level. What I would like to see is some of the amenities that you want in, I believe it's the most southern portion, phase one, if they can be moved to where some of our existing businesses are, so that we can get some activity and hopefully some synergy going there. If that's practical, I would like to see that.
I'm sorry, can you repeat? You'd like to see the amenities?
You have the...
I'm going to go back for you. Sorry. That's what was presented to the Planning Commission.
And these are the activities that were in phase one, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And the ones that I'm looking at now are the passive activity ones? That's up near Tuk Tuk Tai, and how far is that from the keg?
It's far north. It's up closer to the movie theater.
Oh, up here.
So okay. It's up in this area, up here. So the idea was to get rid of the bocce ball, the cornhole, the stuff that's down, the active amenities that are down on the south, and pull the active amenities up to the north. So that's the major change with the amenity space in that proposal that the vice mayor is talking about. And then that also continues the commitment for right now what you're seeing is the sidewalk over on the west. So we would change that to the multi-use path and the extension with the additional park horse spots moving up. So that's the major modification that the vice mayor was talking about.
Okay.
Does that help?
That helps. Okay. And am I to understand that that's where we are right now?
I think the motion on the floor.
I understand the motion on the floor. I want to know if this is something that can be done, considered.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank Sorry, you. I'll be appropriate. Mayor? And Councilmember Jones-Ivy, we are comfortable with either the courtyard proposal or that modification of amenity space.
Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. Ms. Sylvan, one thing that's been lacking for a long time in this project, because it's had so many changes, does Town West have an estimate, not a timeline, but an estimate, what is the value of the construction proposed as of today, November 15th, including the two apartment areas and a hotel?
Mayor, members Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, I cannot answer that off the top of my head. There was a significant economic analysis that was done that we were not privy to, that the town did, that I think did that calculation. We had our own as well, but it was based on the original proposal. And as we came through council and made some different changes, the economic analysis that I believe you have has those numbers for this proposal. So I am not privileged to have seen those.
Because personally, I'm deeply interested in how much 4% sales tax we propose to get from this. I recall reading in the newspapers about a $300 million project, but that included three hotels, two five-story apartment buildings. The current projects, nothing like that. So, you know, it's difficult to know. For me personally, in evaluating the public-private partnership, I never knew what Oral Valley truly stood to gain from the ever-evolving design. That was my concern. Another question. Oh, please.
I just didn't know if somebody from staff, I believe that was discussed in an executive session a while ago. I just don't have those numbers. I'm not privy to your numbers.
A question I have that's related to that analysis and the fact it has, in my opinion, hasn't been updated for 2 years. A concern that I have is what we offer with the public-private partnership is four more restaurants to an area that already has seven. You've got Tuk Tuk Thai, Peach Wave, Red Lobster, Keg, Olive Garden, Fork and Fire, and In-N-Out. I know this town. How do we propose that, you know, merely 1,500 additional people, 1,000 to 1,500 additional people is going to make over 50% more restaurants succeed in the same area? That's where what I can't get to. I know there'll be more economic activity, but also to me it'll be potentially cannibalizing economic activity. People are not going to eat an extra meal because there's 11 restaurants. They're just going to have extra choices. And that's why the economic analysis and looking at it, and I guess it's my background, I'm just used to an analysis like that that changes literally 1,000 times. But what's going on is that as you update the analysis, everybody learns what's going on. And that's what's really been lost here and why I spoke so passionately about this negotiation being public. Because the public would be telling us, no, Councilmember Bowen, remember, we have this now, this now. I really want to know, what's that 4% going to get us? I know it's a lot of money, but I know it's not $300 million. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
So I have a question, Ms. Sullivan, and thank you for your presentation. One question is, so the one proposal with the courtyard, that's contingent on the first restaurant. And so the other alternative with the passive play and seating area, that is not contingent upon anything, right? That's part of the first phase.
Yes. Mayor.
And I think for similar reasons, there are five existing restaurants. I think it'd be, and then there's the three others that provide either drinks or food of some kind, but I wouldn't consider them necessarily restaurants. So there's a significant, there's a critical mass there in Marketplace already of folks providing food and beverages. And Mr. Horvath at the Planning and Zoning Commission, I think, posed the question to the Planning and Zoning Commission, do you know of any restaurants that want to move in here, when the argument was being made to pool the courtyard? And, of course, you know, there wasn't. And there's nobody knocking on Town West's door either, is my understanding, to bring a restaurant in here. Although I certainly want to compliment Town West for what I think has been a really wonderful effort to fill the spaces at the Marketplace. I think something that is unknown, that there's actually more space filled today than when Mr. Horvath or Town West purchased the Marketplace. So I really appreciate that and the new businesses that have come in, and I've visited every business that's there. So that's one of the things that appeals to me about the development happening in that north area, is that that's something that can happen now. It's something that I think would benefit the businesses, certainly in that vicinity. So Tuk Tuk Thai, Hoppy Vine, Peach Wave, Char Pie, the theaters.
Mr. Mayor, would you like to amend the motion?
Possibly, but let me just, so I favor that personally, and that doesn't negate a, you know, the restaurants or a courtyard. The market will make that determination. I just have a feeling that is not not in the short term. And I think what's really needed is some short term improvement to this corridor. The other, so the multi-use path, if we could just see where that links with Water Harvest Way.
Does that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, thanks. So where it connects with Water Harvest Way, it looks like we're, you know, we have a pedestrian bike crossing safety zone. I've been out here several times. I walk the path. I go to the signalized intersection to cross Water Harvest Way and then take the sidewalk over to the sidewalks that are on either side of this. I think it would be, so there's a median and some of this along some of the, you can't really cross Water Harvest Way. It would seem to me that, and I think the multi-use path is a great addition, but I think if we could bring the multi-use path to the east and connect it with at the signalized intersection, that would make a lot more sense. Or I think it would just be a better connection. We already have an intersection there, right? A signalized intersection. To have a pedestrian crossing where it's being shown here, and then to have the, I don't think that that's desirable.
Mayor, we're comfortable with that. So as okay. If it's approved this evening with a condition that occur.
So it sounds like Councilmember Solomon is open to amending his motion.
I think those are both very good suggestions, and I'm more than happy for a friendly amendment regarding, in lieu of the courtyard, add the play area to the north and move the multi-path entrance to align with the light and the intersection by Olive Garden.
I would lift and reapply my second to those amendments.
So I appreciate the fact that we met yesterday. The fact that you have anything is appreciated.
That's. I'm going to give the kudos to Rob and Liz, who worked all day today on both of these. Yeah.
And I understand bubble diagrams, and I just want to, how do we get to a more, specific, sir, I'm going to ask you to, we're in a business meeting, and if you would please remain quiet, I would appreciate it. So I'd like to see something more specific. How can we do that to move? And I want to move this forward. Nobody wants to move this forward more than I do.
I don't know if staff wants to participate in this discussion, because I don't necessarily want to speak for staff. But I think some direction that we work with staff on the amenity package. Again, we're looking at things that are what we call passive, but you may call active. Is that what you're speaking about in
the
play area?
I just like to see something. I mean, these are fine photographs. I would just like to see something more. I mean, what we're actually going to do. These are just, here's some samples, Council, of kind of what we're thinking. But I'd really like to see what is actually going to happen. And if that means deferring to staff to work with you so that we can move this forward, I think I'm comfortable with that personally, Vice Mayor.
I'd like to suggest that we move it forward and refer to staff, and also give authority to the mayor to make that call, because that way we can move it forward tonight, and then we're fortunate to have a landscape architect for a mayor who can make sure that the amenities are robust and, according to what I think we would all expect. But that would be my suggestion.
Are you comfortable amending your motion to include the mayor to work with staff to?
I'm fine with that. My only question would be if legal is.
A good question.
If the applicant's all right with that concession, I don't think there's a problem.
We are all right with that concession. We look forward to working with you.
Okay, any more questions, discussion? Vice Mayor?
Can we just clarify before we vote what we've got?
Yes. The amended motion would be, I move to approve ordinance number 23-05, adopting the revised plan area development amendment as presented today by the applicant, which would include the changes of relocation of the multi-use paths to the lighted intersection by Olive Garden, and in lieu of the courtyard incorporating the passive play area, whose final details will be agreed upon between the applicant, staff, with final approval by the mayor. Based on the finding, the request is in general conformance with the overall design of the previously approved entertainment district.
Second.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. All right, any more questions, discussion? Councilmember Bowen?
Just one more for the applicant. Does the revised motion truly free you up to move the apartments in Area 1 forward and the hotel and apartments in Area 4? Great. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Bowen. Vice Mayor?
I just wanted to clarify that this staging will be tied to certificate of occupancy for the apartments, right? That's what we have? Okay. We don't need to add that to the motion or anything. Okay.
I'm clear. Yeah, this is okay. To meet the rec area for the,
for apartments. The apartments.
We were
right.
Only
okay.
Modifying that if it's the courtyard.
Okay. I thought so. I just wanted to clarify. Thanks.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Future agenda items?
Mr. Mayor?
Excuse me. Councilmember Solomon, would you make a motion,
yes,
please?
I move to approve the revised master development plan / conceptual site plan as presented tonight, and including the changes made in just approved motion. Based on the finding, the request is in general conformance with the overall design of the previously approved entertainment district.
Second.
Okay, second by Councilmember Green. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Get those shovels out. Okay, future agenda items. Seeing none, before we close, I just want to wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your families and the holidays. And I move to adjourn.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Solomon. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. Good night, everyone.